Mother's Day, just around the corner. Call Kuhn Flowers and send mom a beautiful floral arrangement. She'll love it and she'll love you. This is Dan Hicken, and Kuhn Flowers wants to be your florist.
Welcome into the Frangie Show on a Stanley Pools Thursday, and what a special Thursday it is since the 2019 NFL Draft begins in just 5 hours at 8 o'clock. Frank Frangie has this show off as he will be hosting the Jaguars Draft Show from 7 to 10 tonight with former Jaguars Tony Boselli and Jeff Logman. Hayes Carline, Lauren Brooks with you live from Daly's Place, and Tony Smith, kind enough to join us for the next 4 hours after hosting Jaguars today this morning. Hello, gentlemen.
How are you?
I am fantastic, thanks. I am ready for the draft to begin. Well, really, I'm ready for about 9:15 tonight. And then I want to immediately go to YouTube and break down whichever player the Jaguars draft, all of his film that I can find. That's what I want.
I know I am, I'm really ready for us to completely dismiss a bunch of guys that we'll never have to really talk about again. I'm really looking forward to it, especially a bunch of offensive linemen. I mentioned this with Hicken. That's right. I talked to Dan Hicken today on the air. That's how long I've been around here on 1010XL broadcasting today. But told him, it's funny, you know, every year at the draft and the Jags draft in seventh and all the names that we've talked to potentially landing here in Jacksonville, a bunch of them are offensive linemen, and maybe they do call one of those names. Every other name along that offensive line that they don't call, we may never mention them again. Like, there's a chance we never seriously talk about any of them that they don't take again because it's offensive line, and it's so anonymous once they get into the league, generally speaking. So, yeah, maybe they take Jonah Williams. If they don't, this might be it. This might be the last time we ever have a serious conversation about Jonah Williams playing football in our broadcasting lives.
The thing that I always come back to is there's going to be 32 picks tonight, and 16 of them will be massive disappointments. It happens pretty much in every draft. All these players have something that makes you believe in them to some extent, and that's what makes this so fascinating is – it's easy to buy in on a group of players that you like. There's also, you know, reasons why you wouldn't like a certain group of guys that are considered certain first rounders in this draft. But that's what has always been so fascinating about this night is we're going to see future Hall of Famer in all likelihood pick tonight, at least one. But we're going to see 16 players that end up being colossal disappointments in some form or fashion. And you just hope the pick that these guys make will be the right one, and very cool how they've done everything here at Daly's Place, digging the teal tablecloths and everything in the setup. So if you're coming out here, it should be a great time, and you are ready as well.
Thank you. I am decked out in teal and gold on my feet for my shoes, so I'm ready. Two things. One, I remember last year the Jaguars, at least we thought, we're considering the guard Isaiah Wynn out of Georgia. Mm-hmm. And the only other time I thought about him after the Patriots drafted him is when he got injured, right? Because I think he tore his ACL. I know he was lost for the season.
Will Hernandez, it was the same thing. When they played the Giants, right, like they're playing Will Hernandez. That's
so
about
that,
it.
Those are the only times that I really think of them. And you're right, Hayes. This seems to be quite a scene. This is the second year, obviously, that Daly's Place has been here for the draft. And I envision the draft one day coming to Jacksonville, and I can just see how we could fill up, obviously not just Daly's Place, but a part of the stadium with the throngs of people. I was out and about a little bit today. I saw Jaguars gear on lots of people. I think throughout this city, this is something that people have had on their calendars for quite a long time because obviously it was a losing season very early into the season. But I think tonight is going to be a blast here. And if you want to come, just go to jaguars.com/draftnight. You'll get to see Calais Campbell, Tony Boselli, and of course watch the Jaguars make their seventh overall pick, assuming that they stay at seven. Throughout the show, Mike Dempsey will join us live from Nashville, and we'll also talk to Pete Prisco up there live from the draft, thanks to our friends from Showtime Sports Cards and Collectibles. All right, we've waited months, but now we're going to wait just under 5 hours. The Jaguars need offensive weapons. That is well known. But this draft has a ton of defensive talent. So if you had to bet right now, 3:09 p.m. on draft day, are the Jaguars going offense or defense?
I think they're going offense. I think that's what it'll be. I think partly because the draft isn't going to fall the way I think ideally they'd like it to. I think Josh Allen would be the ultimate home run in terms of guys that could potentially fall. That's going to require a lot of quarterbacks going ahead of the Jaguars in the top six, which is it's tough to project that right now based on what we know. So I think when the Jaguars get on the clock, you're going to see the edge rush board sort of evaporated to an extent. And I think at that point you're going to see a potential run on offensive tackles, and certainly that'll be the hot zone for T.J. Hockenson and Noah Fant. So I think it's offensive based on the fact, Tony, I kind of think that's what the board is going to dictate when it's all said and done in terms of those first six picks.
Yeah, I think they would love for it to be a defensive player, honestly. I think they would be doing high fives, hugging each other in that boardroom if there's a defensive player that they love that is still available to them at six or at seven. Unfortunately, I think they need two quarterbacks and Devin White to be drafted for them to be high-fiving each other, and I just don't think it's going to happen. Like, in the end, I just don't think it's going to happen. I do think the Giants are going defense. If they were willing to pass on quarterbacks last year to go running back with Saquon Barkley, I don't think they're passing up a premier pass rusher this year at number six. So I don't think the Giants are going quarterback. It would be nice if they would. It would be nice if Tampa Bay stays in line and takes Devin White there at number five, and I expect them to, but I think they need two quarterbacks and White off the board in order to get one of these premier defensive linemen. I don't think it happens. If you want to include Montez Sweat as a premier defensive lineman, I think that's still potentially in play for the Jags there at number seven, but I think that's assuming an awful lot. I think it does fall with all those defensive linemen coming off the board before they're picking. So I think it's going to be offense. And if you were to force me to take a pick, I think it's going to be offensive line. I really do. I think it winds up being an offensive line pick, despite how much I think the fans in Jacksonville really want T.J. Hockenson right now. If you were to put a poll up on Twitter, I'm guessing 70% of them would say they want T.J. Hockenson right now if they were going to make the pick for the Jags. I think it's too tempting to have your choice of every offensive lineman in an NFL draft picking seventh for Tom Coughlin to bypass that opportunity to draft a tight end, which as an old-school NFL guy, I don't think he's going to value that position at number seven when he can get a big-time offensive lineman.
Funny you mention a poll. The aforementioned Dan Hicken tweeted out a poll. Drill question of the day, who do you want? This is the last time we're going to ask it. Who do you want? Jonah Williams, Juwan Taylor, T.J. Hockenson, Ed Oliver. 63% T.J. Hockenson.
Yeah.
So you're very close with your 70% guess. For me, I don't think either Juwan Taylor or Jonah Williams are going to be an elite offensive tackle. So for me, the value pick is either going to be defensive line or you draft a tight end higher than maybe has been in the past, but you go with T.J. Hockenson. All right, let's head up to Nashville, the site for this year's NFL draft, as we will chat with our own Mike Dempsey. That's coming up next. We are live from Daly's Place on 1010XL 92.5 FM. Hey, it's Caroline, Tony Smith, and Lauren Brooks with you live from Daly's Place as we count down to the NFL draft. And we now welcome in Mike Dempsey live from the draft in Nashville. Mike, how was your trip?
Better than being dead from the draft, Lauren. It was honestly, it was a bumpy ride up to Nashville. I've taken it before. And I don't remember it being that bad. Maybe that's why the Jaguars have not had recent success against the Titans. I just don't know.
Was there turbulence? Is that what you're saying?
Turbulence, seriously. Like, the whole plane was shaking basically the whole time. Like, the plane would shake, and then it would stop long enough for the flight attendant to come down the aisle and say, what do you want to drink? Okay, then they'd run back. And then I was one of the lucky ones who ended up getting Coke with about 10 minutes to go on the flight. So,
wow. Those are not my favorite flights. And I would have had to get something stronger than that if there was turbulence. All right. Well, thanks for joining us, Mike. For a while, now, experts have pegged former Oklahoma quarterback Kyler Murray to the Cardinals. Is that what you predict?
At this point, I don't know how you could predict anything other than that if you're playing the odds. I think it's overwhelming odds that it would be Kyler Murray, but I heard a few things, in the last week or from one of my own sources in Arizona from, what's building today, the reports as well. One, I heard that it was 80-20, and this was a week ago, that it was going to be Kyler Murray. That's still not definitive, right? And that if it wasn't going to be Kyler Murray, that Nick Bosa would be the pick. And so I asked why Bosa instead of Quinnen Williams, and the response I got was that they think Nick Bosa is more of an alpha male than Quinnen Williams, and I guess that's important to them. But today, you see a report that very recently, now that could mean, hours, days, I'm not sure what, they told Quinnen Williams that he is still in play for the number one pick as well. So, you know, Nick Bosa may be more of an alpha male, but they've got that guy in Chandler Jones to some degree. Not that you can ever have too much pass rush, but at this point, I think it will be Kyler Murray. But I think the bigger question is, who pulls the trigger on Kyler Murray if the Cardinals pass? Because what does Kyler Murray want? How many of these teams have considered the baseball ramifications and working out a contract with him? How many teams have gotten that deep into the weeds with it? It's still going to be fascinating to watch. And, you know, usually, even though you have an idea who the number one pick is, the NFL, I think, has it falling right into its lap the way it wants tonight, that it's still a high degree of uncertainty as we tune in for the first time Roger Goodell walks to the podium.
Drama. We love drama. All right, we believe the Jaguars will select one of the following three positions: offensive line, defensive line, tight end. Right now, with our conversation with you, we're going to focus on offensive line. Which offensive lineman would you take?
Oh, boy. You know, I'm going to say Jonah Williams, okay? And here's why. And I've kind of come to this late in the process. And the entire time Juwan Taylor was at Florida, I never heard anybody describe him as a future Pro Bowl. I heard that described a lot about Jonah Williams. And he's got the versatility. You know, some say he might not have the choice to play inside as opposed to outside. But when you compare, like, his arm length to Andre Dillard, who's the best left tackle prospect, he's got longer arms, and that's the big knock on Jonah Williams. So how can that be a knock on him when it was knocking Andre Dillard? I do leave Dillard out there as a possibility, because if you grade them all equally, and only one of them, if you're the Jags, you see as a pure left tackle, take the guy who's more.
Get your Gators on 1010XL.
It's an old rock Thursday. Music the way it should be, or at least used to be, on The Frangie Show.
A little Van Morrison on this old rock Thursday. Welcome back to The Frangie Show, live from Daly's Place, counting down to the 2019 NFL Draft. And right now I'm joined by Cody and Brandy Rhodes and Adam Hangman Page from AEW, the wrestling organization financed by Shad Khan and run by Tony Khan. First, I have to just quickly ask, Adam, how did you get your nickname Hangman?
Oh, man. It's been a while ago. I joined a group called Bullet Club. There was a
ask, you know, it seems reasonable, but now you're putting in a lot of eggs in the left tackle basket. I mean, what are your options? Is Josh Wells? I guess, look, that's who you would go to bat with right now. If Cam's not ready to go, or you know, if he were to re-injure himself or something along those lines. Because, look, in the end, you're only going to draft one of these three, potentially, and maybe none of them. And so, you know, you're not going to have that superior depth. You're not going to be stacked up with great options behind all these spots. So you're going to have to get a little bit lucky on the help front. It's a good point. It just seems like, man, that's putting a lot of eggs in the left tackle basket. If you've got the chance and you feel, now look, if they grade Juwan Taylor as clearly a superior player, then you take clearly a superior player, even if he's limited to one side of the offensive line. But if you think these guys are pretty close, give me some guys with at least the versatility to play on the left side.
Hi, Mike. It's Hayes. Is there a guy beyond the first round that you like on the offensive line in case, you know, the Jaguars do either get a defensive player that falls to them, or maybe they do pull the trigger on T.J. Hockenson?
Well, I mean, Caleb McGarry, if he's there in round two. Hayes, I'm not I'm not a guy who grades offensive linemen. I don't grade Jonah Williams. You know what I mean? I don't pop in the tape because I wouldn't know what to look for. I'd know less what to look for at offensive line than I would at almost any other position. But among the names and the way I've seen them rated, he seems like a guy that could be available in round two. And, look, they may go that way. Dalton Risner, there are a number of guys that have been projected to them in mock drafts in the second and even the third round. And that's the thing. You can't get everything, right? And somebody made a good point to me this morning. Hey, you know, you look at all the defensive line talent. Well, if that's all gone, take the old lineman. Have your choice of the elite one with the seventh pick. If you want to come back and get a D line, then all those teams will have satisfied that need in, you know, those early picks of round two, and you may get some guys pushed down to you. Of course, that doesn't address tight end, but to my knowledge, they don't have three picks in the top 40. So, you know, unless they trade down, they're not going to be able to address one of those three spots, at least in the first couple rounds.
Mike Dempsey joining us live from Nashville a few hours before the draft. Mike, we'll get back to the big uglies in a second, but a quick mention, the Jaguars did exercise the fifth-year option for cornerback Jalen Ramsey, so he's now under contract with the Jaguars through the 2020 season. No surprise there, right?
Oh, no, why wouldn't you? It would have been the surprise of the century if they did anything else. No, 100% you knew they had to do this, and I'm sure wanted to do it. It's one of the advantages now of taking a player in the first round. Yes, you know, the contracts are guaranteed. Keep in mind, these guys, you know, the NFLPA is set up to help players that are already players in the National Football League. So when, you know, it was a few years ago, Sam Bradford would come in. He had a $50 million guarantee in his contract. That was crazy. Now the teams have more control over what the draft picks do. You know, the players that go in the first round don't love it because the team does have that extra year of control, but that's part of the system. There's always something the players aren't going to love. There's always something the owners aren't going to love. This was something, though, that there's not a football person walking the planet that would not have picked up the fifth-year option on Jalen Ramsey.
It sounds like Jonah Williams, if you were going to choose one of these three linemen, would be your preference. How do you rank the other two behind him? Is it Dillard Taylor or Taylor Dillard?
Tony, I'm going to say Dillard Taylor only, but I'm going to say if they have great, like if they think that Taylor is the eighth best player in the draft and Dillard's the 20th best, just because he's a left tackle, I'm not going to take him ahead of him. I'm saying if all these guys are bunched together in their rankings, okay, and I don't know that to be the case. So, if that's the case, I'm going to be happy if they end up going offensive line, whoever they take, because I'm going to assume that they did their due diligence. I'm sure Jaguars skeptics are going to go, well, they took a Gator, or well, they took a Miami or an Alabama Crimson Tide member. You know, just they're going the same old road or
Washington State. Like, are you kidding me?
Right? Are you kidding? When you could have had the SEC player, so not everyone's going to be happy. Regardless, if you don't put any faith in the scouting department, that's fine. But that's the scouting department. That's the group. They're the ones, Coughlin and Caldwell, pulling the trigger on this. They've watched way more film than we ever have in our lifetime. And you know, I'm not going to go, boy, I want Jonah Williams, and they take Juwan Taylor, I'm going to be like, oh, those guys are idiots. I really, that would be foolhardy of me to say.
Mike, how far back do you think they might be willing to trade down?
It's tough, Hayes, because, you know, the Caldwell philosophy has always been one great player over three good players. Well, if you feel like, you know, now moving off offensive line here, if you feel like Hockenson's that one great player, right, do you risk moving out of that realm at all? Now, if you feel like maybe you've got six or seven guys, I get the sense it's not any more than like five or six spots. Like, I don't see, you see Pittsburgh maybe moving into the top 10 or trying to. I don't see them going back to 20. This has not been the MO of this team. I would do it because I don't think the one guy, whether it's Jonah Williams or Andre Dillard or Juwan Taylor or a pass rusher, I don't think that guy puts you in the Super Bowl by himself. So if I could move back to 20, get another first-round pick next year, and add, let's say, a third-rounder this year, I'd do that in a heartbeat. That's me. You know, I'm not saying that's the exact formula to put it all together, but that would be okay for me. But I don't think for them they're going to be, let's say 12-ish, something in that range.
Mike, we're going to hear from Cedric Obwehi a little later in the show. Hayes caught up with him yesterday. Do you think it's possible that he's the plan for starting right tackle?
I don't think you can say he's the plan. If he's the plan, then they're being foolish here because he hasn't proven that he can be the plan. You could make the argument, Lauren, look, we brought in this guy, that guy. They brought in several guys who can play right tackle, right? They do have Josh Wells coming back, you know, and maybe Will Richardson they feel stronger about than we do just because they're not talking about ball all season. It doesn't behoove anyone in the off season to tell you prior to the draft what they're thinking. So maybe they think, you know what, we got about four candidates. Let's put them in the pot and see which one survives the heat the longest. And if Obwehi's the one who emerges as a former first-round talent, fine. Because, again, it's a right tackle position that there probably have been a lot of teams that have gone deep into the playoffs with kind of no-name guys at that spot, as long as they're solid. But if you're going to tell me that you signed Cedric Obwehi based on what he's done so far in the NFL and say that's the plan, then I think that's kind of silly.
All right, Mike, well, we will check in with you in the next hour. Besides chatting with us, what else are you doing up there?
We're doing radio shows for SiriusXM. We're going to be down at, like, right just a few blocks from the draft itself. Everything's happening outside. You know, they turned Broadway into, like, a fan festival. Let me see if I can tell you exactly where we're going to be. We're going to be at the Bridgestone Arena tonight and tomorrow, and then we're at Margaritaville all day Saturday, which is going to be, like, a block and a half from the draft main stage as well. And hosting shows tonight from 8 to midnight, tomorrow from 7 to midnight, and then from Saturday morning until I need to get out of here to get on a plane. So we're going to have a good time.
Yeah, you are going to be a little busy. We'll have a margarita for me, and we will chat with you in the next hour.
Hey, thanks, guys. Good to talk to you.
Thanks so much. All right, we are live from Daly's Place. And coming up here in July, there is a live wrestling event. That's right, wrestling. So we will chat with three of the talented wrestlers coming up next right here on 1010XL and 92.5 FM. A little Van Morrison on this old rock Thursday. Welcome back to the Fran G Show, live from Daly's Place, counting down to the 2019 NFL Draft. And right now I'm joined by Cody and Brandy Rhodes and Adam Hangman Page from AEW, the wrestling organization financed by Shad Khan and run by Tony Khan. First, I have to just quickly ask, Adam, how did you get your nickname Hangman?
Oh, man. It's been a while ago. I joined a group called Bullet Club. There was a guy in there named Luke Gallows. He left. I took his spot.
Okay.
Pretty much.
I didn't know if you just really liked playing Hangman the game.
No. I'm a little bit of a Western fan as well.
Okay.
You know.
Totally understand. All right. To the two married ones, Cody and Brandy. How is it working with your spouse all day, every day? Do you ever get sick and tired of each other?
It's a nightmare.
It's a challenge. It's a challenge.
Who annoys who more? I'm just kidding. You don't have to say that.
I probably annoy her more. I like to field test everything.
Okay.
And I feel like she just do your thing, you know? Like, just she would rather just trust that I'm doing it. But I ask a lot of questions and stuff. It's actually wonderful. I mean, it's what we met on the job,
okay,
and we just stayed on the job. I love it.
Yeah, there's definitely a lot of work never ends. It never stops because of that. So a lot of times what I do is I just randomly schedule cocktails and dinner with my friends.
Okay.
So that I can get away from talking about work. That's pretty much the only place that it's off.
Oh, I didn't even know that. We just moved.
Yeah.
And I thought she was just met new friends.
No,
I didn't know.
It's
an old Cody break, huh?
Little bit of a work break.
Wow.
Well, and that's the thing, I wonder, like, if you get home, you say, okay, no more discussing work from now until tomorrow. We need scheduled time away from work.
At this stage in the game, that's impossible.
It's,
okay.
Yeah.
We
got to
talk about it all the time. There's no hands off yet. There, at some point,
there will be.
Yeah, and on the creative side, it's fun to talk about it because everybody with All Elite Wrestling, and that's one of the big, like, prerequisites Tony put in place, is you have to love wrestling. So you end up saying, hey, we're not going to talk about it, but what else are you going to talk about? We all love wrestling. I was born into wrestling, so it's just you want to talk about it.
Right. You have a very famous father.
Yeah. My family, especially, like, it's always fun being here because my family, my dad really broke in the championship wrestling from Florida with Eddie Graham and Tampa, Jacksonville, Miami, Orlando. I mean, all over before he moved on to the international scene and kind of the advent of television wrestling began, which is what All Elite Wrestling is, you know, aiming to be. So it's just great. I like being in Florida. I'm excited for July 13th in this very building, although we were talking about the weather.
It's going
to
be.
I was not trying to make you concerned. Just trying to prepare you that the heat certainly will be upon us here in July. But it will be July 13th here at Daly's Place. How will the event go? When people buy tickets, what can they expect?
You know, I feel like, I mean, this is a big place. You know, I'm looking up and looking around. But you know, as an amphitheater, it is still intimate, I think. So it'll be a little bit more of an intimate setting than maybe a lot of wrestling fans are used to. Even though it's still this big. I think the ring's going to be down there in the pit. Cody's been mapping the seats out. So.
Yeah. The ring is right down there in the pit. It's a different look from an arena, from arena wrestling sometimes. And we really wanted to diversify the look. You know, when we do Double or Nothing in Vegas May 25th, and then when we come here on July 13th, they're going to have a completely different thing. You know, if you were to have a video game based on All Elite Wrestling, Daly's Place would have to be one of the selectable places you could wrestle because it's such a unique environment. I saw Weezer sitting right over there, and it was a great time. It'll be hot.
But it's summertime.
But
you go to events, you expect to be warm. But the one thing I'm noticing is there's not a bad seat in the house.
Definitely.
So that's great. Like, and wherever you're sitting, you're going to have a full view of the ring.
And it's for a very good cause, you know, with proceeds of the gate. And there it is, the Victim Assistance Advisory Council. Basically, proceeds going to victims of gun violence. And that's a huge deal to Tony and all of us. It's one of the first things we announced about this show. The fact that it's almost sold out already, it's going to be fun.
We talk about concussions and CTE in football a lot.
Yeah.
Is that a conversation that goes on in wrestling?
It happens. Her and I, we worked with WWE for 10 years, and that discussion is very frequent. What?
I didn't work with them for
going
10
back
years.
To the
I did. I did.
Thing.
Sorry. That's a discussion that comes up a lot.
Okay.
You know, wrestling in general, all of wrestling, we've learned so much about the long-term effects of having multiple concussions in a row,
right,
that all of wrestling really kind of changed its profile. You don't see chair shots to the head. Everyone's a little bit safer about what they do. I know here we'll have a really strict protocol and just plan in place with All Elite Wrestling about if somebody was to get their bell rung and have a concussion, they're not going to be working the next night. That was something that plagued wrestling in the past. It really doesn't anymore. But we had a pretty safe crew.
Yeah, I think so.
We got a real safe crew, real right? Safe. That's not a strange thing to hear about a wrestling company.
It's funny, I would never
it's
have thought about
safe
it.
Crew.
That because, you know, a lot of people are told, well, it's all fake. Well, okay, so if it's fake, then that means that chair that's hitting that person's head, well, it's not really coming into contact with it. But you watch it and you think, no, that chair is really hitting their head. So there are repercussions from something like that. All right, you guys are here to support the Jaguars in the draft. How have the Jaguars supported All Elite Wrestling thus far?
Jaguars have been fantastic. On the media side, the brand side of everything, I ask for support from them a lot, just the same. And we kind of go back and forth on just supporting each other, you know, socially and helping each other with our messaging. It's kind of become a little bit of a family environment,
awesome.
Which is cool.
Right, and we had our press conference where we announced, you know, the formation of the company, everything, just right over here, you know, right outside the amphitheater.
I remember
in the parking
that.
Lot. So the place as a whole is a special place to us.
It's probably lining up, you know, to be the unofficial home of all of this. This is the very first press conference, like Hangman said. We're doing this event here. We need a home. Jacksonville needs to be our home, so yeah.
Well, you are welcome because we're hospitable here in the South, as you know. All
right,
there are guys like The Rock who started in football and then became wrestlers. How does football or that type of sport help someone get into wrestling?
I would probably say like twitch movement.
Yep.
The difference between quickness and speed. Bruiser Brody was another person. Roman Reigns. All these guys from the 80s who played for West Texas State who had the ability to do what we do in the ring. Because you goes from a real slow, deliberate pace to all the next thing you know, you're up and running, and he's up and running, or she's up and running. And
the explosiveness.
I'd say twitch movement and explosiveness.
Right, yeah. And just general body control, you know what I mean? Like a lot of other athletes will try to get into wrestling, and I feel like football, maybe just football and wrestling, you know, they kind of go hand in hand in terms of just body control, honestly.
Absolutely.
Also a great place to source from because you still want big, big guys in wrestling, so every now and then you spot one may not have a wrestling background but if an athletic background like football, easier to train.
So when the Jaguars make their selection tonight with the 7th overall pick, you might go, oh, that person eventually could get into wrestling. I need to talk to them in case things go south.
Keep
on the football
on.
Field, which obviously we certainly hope that does not happen because the 7th overall pick, we need them to play here a very long time. All right, so you guys are involved in both the in-ring performances, but also a lot of the other infrastructure. How does it go being kind of friends with people, but also being their boss?
It's a learning experience for me, for sure. I told myself as a kid, I always wanted to be the boss. I wanted to be and now I don't know.
With great responsibility comes great power.
Or
great power comes with
right.
That's
there
what
it is.
I have one thing working for me, which I learned recently. People recently opened up and started telling me that I'm scary. So I'm already scary to people. So I don't have any problems because I guess everybody's already scared of me.
Scared? So, why would they be scared of you? You're gorgeous. I think I'm really
there are some days where I can see people's Feeble's point.
I worked with a wrestling organization called the NWA last year, and it's run by a guy named Billy Corgan from the Smashing Pumpkins. And he told me something really special one time that I've never forgot. He said, when it comes to entertainment, you should just let talented people be talented. You know, that you get somebody like Hangman Page who can do literally anything and everything in the ring and beloved by our fan base. What the hell am I going to tell him, you know, just other than go out there and steal the show? And
I'll have to say something, too. You know, these two having, you know, executive type, you know, jobs now, my buddies Matt and Nick and Kenny all the same. I'm talent. You know, I'm just a talent. I'm a wrestler. I'm 27, so my focus now is on my in-ring career. You know, I'm not at that point yet. And this, to me, they don't feel like bosses to me. They feel like a team to me, you know, and we're all a team working together to make this thing happen. And that's the way we worked together, you know, when we were all just talent, and it's just the same now, honestly.
Yeah.
Well, and I think the best bosses really do listen. And so when it comes to even the draft, you know, hopefully the people making the decision tonight are also kind of listening to maybe what the coaches and the players have to say as well to try and select the best person. All right. Yeah. So what's the biggest, besides the event here at Daly's Place, July 13th, what else is upcoming that we can get people excited about?
Well, we're really excited. The very first AEW event is in Las Vegas, May 25th, MGM Grand Garden Arena. We've been able to say it'll be on pay-per-view. That's becoming more official as the day literally unfolds, where you'll be able to see the show itself being sold out. But that's where it all starts. And to get an idea as to what AEW will be and the alternative it provides to the other wrestling that's out there in our world, that show out of the gate, May 25th. And then we actually, Daytona, June 29th, partnering with a CEO, the game organization. So we've got those two shows, and then we're showing up to be welcomed in our unofficial home here July 13th, and then it really starts after that. It really picks up schedule-wise.
I heard a rumor as to who you're fighting, Cody, in the ring in Las Vegas. Is that just a rumor?
So it's no longer when was it? A few days ago? Episode 13? Yeah, so it'll be myself and my brother, which is nuts.
That is crazy!
Yeah, and we don't... It's you blur the lines in wrestling. We love each other. We really do, but we don't like each other. And it's a perfect place to take a real-life scenario and a story and kind of amplify it. It's a weird, cathartic thing about wrestling. Let's take our real drama, put it out there, and see if people dig it. Brandy can't stand them, so I love that.
I'm actually looking forward to the match because, you know, it's been it's been teased a lot, like, are we going to get this match? Are we going to get this match? And for a long time, I've been against it because I think, you know, good can come from wrestling your brother. But it's been so long, and there's been so many times that I've wanted Cody to put this to rest, and we get the opportunity to do that in a grand fashion.
Yeah.
Because, it's in Las Vegas. That makes perfect sense.
Yeah.
I think that's terrifying, you know, from a sense of if I lost to my sibling. You know, obviously you're going to think about it from the opposite perspective. Like, I'm going to beat my brother.
Yeah.
But it's just as far as, like, having to live in the family, if I lost, that would just make me so upset.
Yeah. And, well, I've always been upset with him. I mean, he's got, like, Sobek height on him. He's, like, 7 feet tall. And I didn't get tall like him. There's all kinds of little brother things that make me mad.
We're going
about
way
him.
Back.
Way back, yeah. There's all kinds of little things. But he's 16 years older than me, and this is the winter of his career. He's been really public about that. So it was now or never on this match if we were going to do it. And he can still go, I have no doubt. So I'm excited. I'm excited for it to be over, too, and just see kind of where the chips lie. Because then we got to go throw one of these on and help produce the rest of the event, which will be fun, a challenge.
Absolutely. Brandy and Adam, for people who've never watched this before, why should they watch it?
In my instance, you know, being on the women's side for such a long time, and I was part of wrestling when the women were not a focus. I was actually on the tail end of when we were getting hired strictly off of what we looked like.
Okay.
There was no expectation level. Women's wrestling has evolved so much, and we have some of the most talented women in the entire world that are going to be on all of these shows coming up. You're going to get to see so much of what hard work has come over the past few years just in the women's division, period. And I think anybody who misses any of that is on the wrong side of history. So you're going to want to definitely tune in. And if you're not a big women's wrestling fan, open your mind to the idea of being intrigued by this, because these girls can do incredible things and they work extremely hard. And so the spotlight that they're going to be given in this company, they deserve.
That's awesome.
Right. And when I talk to people about wrestling, you know, a lot of times I get the same answers of, oh, I used to watch back in the 80s, or I watched in the Attitude Era with Stone Cold and all these kind of things. But they're not, you know, they don't necessarily follow it as much now. And I feel like, you know, a lot of the downsides that they might see in wrestling now, we're kind of on the, you know, the resurging edge of, you know, kind of changing that, you know, giving more, you know, long-term storytelling, more athleticism. More, you know, like Brandy was talking about, a focus on women, things like that, you know what I mean? So I feel like we're on the cutting edge of, you know, resurgence in wrestling popularity.
Awesome. Well, last thing, favorite Jaguars player currently on the team, or former Jaguars player?
I'm all about Nick. I've been marketed. I'm all about it. The season, yeah.
I assumed that's who you meant.
Yeah, I think Foles, yeah. We have a lot in common, I believe.
Yeah, you're a Jalen Ramsey guy, right, B? Your brother is.
Is he? Yes,
yeah,
he is.
He was bothering
me
about
it. He's been bothering me about getting a jersey. So at some point, I'm going to have to come clean on that, I guess. He doesn't really ask for a lot, so I feel like I can make something happen.
Yeah, you got to do it. The Jaguars did just exercise the fifth-year option on him, so he'll be through here at least through 2020.
Love it.
I'm sure longer than that, but there's another reason to get the jersey. All right, Adam Hangman Page, Cody Brandy Rhodes, thank you so much for joining us, and certainly have so much fun tonight here at Daily's Place, and obviously have a ton of fun on July 13th as well, and in Las Vegas as well.
Thank you. Thank you.
Thank you so much. All right, Tony Smith, Hayes Carlin will rejoin me, and we will get it back to the draft coming up next on Draft Day on 1010XL 92.5 FM. Welcome back to the Frangie Show on Draft Day on a Stanley Pools Thursday. Frank Frangie, of course, has this show off, but he will be back in just a few hours. He is going to be hosting the Jaguars Draft Show from 7 to 10 with Tony Baselli and Jeff Logman. Little Van Morrison for you. After the wrestling spike of energy, we're just going to calm it right back down.
Great job with the interview, by the way.
Oh, I thank you. They were an absolute blast. And certainly that event here at Daily's Place July 13th is going to be fantastic. Hayes Carlin, Tony Smith, Lauren Brooks with you live from Daily's Place. They are getting everything set up here. And it's going to be one fun night as the Jaguars pick 7th overall. All right, Florida, Florida State, and Georgia have several players that are hoping to hear their names called either tonight or sometime Friday or Saturday. Let's predict where they will go. I will start with the one that I think might be the most difficult to predict, and that is Florida's defensive lineman, Ja'Kai Polite. Where, just give me a round, Tony, of where Ja'Kai Polite goes.
Top third.
Okay.
That's about where it feels like that's where he's landing right now. It's interesting, right? If you go back and look at Mel Kiper Jr.'s January mock drafts with Ja'Kai Polite, he was a top 15 player.
Yep.
And then I think they started digging really into some of the tape on him, and then you had the combine stuff where he apparently couldn't handle an interview in the room with these guys. And look, that matters to a lot of teams. I think late two, early three, I wouldn't be surprised if the Jags, if they wanted to, could potentially have an opportunity at the top of the third round to have Ja'Kai Polite sitting there, despite how he was talked about early on in this process.
His Carline, a.k.a. plus 10. 10 over.
10 over here. I believe that Ja'Kai Polite is going to go third round. I think it's – I think there's a lot of concerns. 1 year of production, I think the character concerns are for real. And I think you have to question how dedicated he's going to be. So I think it's going to be a big fall for somebody, as Tony pointed out. A lot of people thought could have been a top 15 pick. I think the Jaguars will pass on him three times tonight. I think he'll be early mid third. Is kind of what I think. Maybe four picks after the Jaguars.
See, I wouldn't be surprised if he ends up going kind of late in that second round, just because a team who had originally evaluated him so high, you know, goes back and turns on this past season's film and goes, you know what? Yeah, the interview didn't go according to plan, but I want a guy that can get to the quarterback. And so I know people are thinking he's going to go in the third. I'm going to snatch him up here at the end of the second. So that's what I'll predict. Let's go with FSU's Brian Burns. Obviously, another pass rusher here.
I'm not going to come off my pick. I have them going 16th to Carolina. I could see, you know, him going higher than that, but he is fairly limited against the run from what we've seen. So I think he falls right in the middle of the first round tonight, and I think it'd be a great pick for the Panthers.
I wouldn't be stunned, honestly, if he was the name at 7. It wouldn't stun me if that's who the Jags went with, if those other defensive linemen were off the board and they thought he was the next best available defensive lineman and thought he was in that group with those guys, because I can see you evaluating and feeling that way about Brian Burns. I don't expect that to be what happens. I think when everything is said and done, I do think kind of that 14 to 20 range is around where he'll be. You're going to see defensive line early. I think you're going to see a run on offensive lineman there at some point, maybe the Jags starting it, but a run on offensive lineman in there. And I think when that next wave of defensive linemen come in, Brian Burns could lead the parade on that next wave of defensive linemen. So I'll put it somewhere in that 14 to 20 range.
I actually have him in our mock drafts that we did yesterday on the Frangie Show going 8th overall to the Lions. I think that they're going to scoop him up early, and because he has been kind of surging as of late.
I don't think anyone has any idea what Detroit wants to do.
No, I don't think so either.
And we've talked to guys, like we had our media mock draft this week, and it was like, well, what do you think they want to do? He's like, whatever. Like, offensive line, defensive line, offensive playmaker, they could use it all. So it could be Hockenson. It could be, I mean,
and that
they're
guy
not going to look
Christian Wilkins.
Yeah, they're not going to look quarterback. I think they should look quarterback, but they're not going to look quarterback, it doesn't seem. But everything is wide open for Detroit there at 8.
Well, and you think pass rusher. I think offensive line for Detroit. So it's a little bit
of a scattered. But then again, it's kind of scattered here. And you know, you do wonder, this is a whole separate conversation, but with Matthew Stafford's wife and what's going on, obviously she had the surgery to remove the brain cancer. She ended up back in the hospital because she was really trying to come off the steroids faster than she should have, or at least the doctors told her she'd probably be able to do. You know, you do wonder, is he at some point going to have to look up and go, I know he was in the facility very early Monday morning and he wants to be the quarterback, but you do have to wonder at some point if something goes awry or if she needs more help, is he going to say, you know what, I just can't be both right now? I don't think that's likely, and I certainly don't hope that's the case, but at least if in the back of my mind I'm thinking, all right, we are going to have to start thinking about our next quarterback, and this is a guy who has a lot going on at home. All right, what about Juwan Taylor, offensive lineman out of Florida? Where does he go? And I'm going to assume, Tony, not coming here to the Jaguars.
I don't think he's coming here at 7. Look, talking to Tony Pauline yesterday was eye-opening. It was something that I hadn't heard anyone else say, and it feels like there are news reports that are kind of picking it up a little bit as of this morning and throughout into the afternoon today. There's apparently something going on with Juwan Taylor's knee. There's something going on with it, and because of it, I think that he likely slips at best into the 20s. In the draft tonight. I certainly don't expect him to be the first offensive lineman's name called when the Jags are picking at 7 at this point. Look, he's a right tackle prospect. That's all he's going to play for you in the league. I wouldn't be surprised even a little bit if he's the 4th offensive lineman drafted when everything is said and done.
Wow.
It was really interesting hearing Tony make that describe him in that fashion yesterday with the medical stuff. I still think Juwan Taylor holds in the top 10. I have him going 9th to the Bills. So I do think there's enough there. And I'm not saying that that's a great pick. I mean, I've been pretty open about it. I don't see how Juwan Taylor is a top 10 pick in this draft. But I can see a team like Buffalo falling in love with him enough to select him at 9. So, you know, it's interesting because a lot of people like Andre Dillard, the left tackle out of Washington State, who does a good job in pass protection, but has a lot of question marks as a run blocker. So I think when you, and then Juwan Taylor, I think it's more, you can see the run blocking. I think you worry a little bit about the pass protection. To me, I think he's going to be a holding machine in the NFL. So that's a big concern, I think, but I think somebody will fall for the traits and I think he'll get overdrafted. And I think the Bills do that tonight and take him at 9.
And that's exactly where I have him going in my mock draft as well. A couple of guys from Georgia, cornerback DeAndre Baker, wide receiver Riley Ridley, and tight end Isaac Nada. Nada, I don't think, ends up going very high, but what about the other two, Baker and Ridley?
I think both have an outside chance at first round, but I think probably top 40. And I'll tell you another guy that I think has got a really good chance to hear his name called earlier than people think, is DeAndre Walker, the defensive end. So I think Georgia probably is going to get shut out of the first round, although there's a chance. But I think they could have three guys go pretty high in that second round.
With Rock Ya-Sin, it seems like elevating daily on draft boards right now. There was a report this morning that multiple teams have Ya-Sin as their number one corner. Ahead of Greedy Williams. That probably hurts Baker a little bit. Look, corner is a valuable position, so I would expect if he doesn't go tonight late, I would think Baker is a guy that we're talking about tomorrow as one of the more valuable guys still available. Is someone going to be willing to maneuver a little bit maybe to get in position to get the best corner still available on a board going into round two and three? Ryan's interesting to me because I think he feels like a third-round pick to me. Like, that's what he feels like to me. I do wonder, because it's such a weird draft class of wide receiver where it's what do you want, and that's what it always comes down to in those middle rounds. So because he feels like that to me, I'll just say he's a third-round pick, but wouldn't be surprised if he wound up, you know, getting into the second round or if he fell into the fourth or fifth. I think there's that big of a range of possibilities for a player like that.
And finally, out of Florida, safety Chauncey Gardner-Johnson.
Go ahead, man.
I think he has an outside chance at first round. Because of the versatility, the value of nickel is certainly increased, and he has the ability, I think, to play free safety. So I think he's got a chance, but I do not have him going in the first round. I think he will be – he might be the first guy off the board. If he does not get picked tonight, he could certainly be the 33rd pick and start us off Friday night. I do not think he'll have to wait long Friday, but I don't think he gets picked tonight.
Any chance he comes here at 38?
I don't think so.
Yeah, I don't think so either.
My gut tells me that teams were spending like crazy on free agent safeties because they didn't like the class. That's what my gut tells me. And I think last year maybe they liked the class and the draft a little bit more, which is why the money got pushed down for safeties in free agency. Like, where they fit into this whole thing, I don't know. I mean, he feels like he could certainly make an argument for him being among the handful of the best safeties in this draft. What that means for him, likely into the second round for me, but I wouldn't be surprised if he winds up in the third.
We will head back up to Music City as Mike Dempsey joins us again live from Nashville. That's coming up next on 1010XL 92.5 FM. Hey, it's Carline, Tony Smith, and Lauren Brooks with you live from Daly's Place as we count down to the 2019 NFL Draft. A little Van Morrison moon dance for you. And Mike Dempsey joins us now live from Nashville. Mike, thanks for joining us again.
When is it not a marvelous night for a moon dance, Lauren?
Any night that you can't see the moon.
Okay. I guess that's a great answer. So there you go. Let's hope that's... I don't know if we're going to see the moon a whole lot tonight in Nashville, though.
What is the
cloudy,
what is the weather like up
rain.
There?
Okay. Right now, it's I'm looking out the window. It's just kind of mostly just a bank of clouds. There was some rain earlier. You saw people on Broadway walking up and down with some umbrellas, but nothing too heavy. You know, but there's got to be a little bit of concern because it's taking place outdoors tonight. Obviously, they got a contingency to move it inside. I do not want to be the NFL person in charge of pulling that trigger. Hopefully, the weather will hold off enough. A little bit of rain, I don't think, will move them in. Any kind of lightning or anything like the thunderstorm variety will probably force them to an alternate venue.
All right, well, we discussed offensive linemen in the 3 o'clock hour. Let's move to defensive linemen. Which defensive end or defensive tackle would you draft if they were all available?
All right, I'm going to put I'll rank them all for you because I thought we might talk about this. I'm going to say Quinnen Williams is number one to me. And reason being, and we mentioned it earlier, Marcel Darius, very hard to believe he's going to be here with a $22 million cap hit next year. If you've got a dominant middle of your defensive line anchor, Tom Coughlin had two of those guys together in Henderson and Stroud at one point. You know, I just think sets things up. You can stop the run. They help your edge rushers improve. Now, I'm going to also assume in this, that Unique Ngakoue will sign a long-term extension, and that Calais Campbell will not retire after this year, right? So I'm going to put Quinnen Williams at number one because more people grade him as the number one overall player than any other player in this draft, I think. If you talk to NFL experts, he gets more love as the best actual player regardless of position. So I'm going to put him at number one. I probably put Bosa at number two because, again, the pundits think or the analysts think that, he's the best pure pass rusher who's out there. I don't think there's a chance. I do think there's a chance Williams is there. I don't think there's a chance that Bosa is there. It makes no sense, but that's how I feel about it. I'll put Ed Oliver at three because, you know, for a couple of years we've heard he's a dominant potential number one overall type player. I don't know if he did a whole lot to dispel that. You know, some people will get a sack number and say, why do you have more? Well, he is a defensive tackle. You know, he's a penetrating defensive tackle. You can pair him with Darius as your starters this year. You could, you know, if Taven Bryan comes along, you can find a way to make it work, big man. You know, I'm not going to pass up talent. That's me personally. Let's see. After that, I guess I'm going to put Josh Allen there. You know, I don't feel as strongly about any of these guys after the top three. I'll probably put Josh Allen, 17 sacks in the SEC, kind of hard to overlook. After that, I think I'm looking to probably draft another position at this point with the number seven pick in the draft. Look, Montez Sweat, maybe he was screwed by a bad evaluation medically at the combine, but that scares me a little bit there. He would probably be in that next spot. Brian Burns, I don't know. You know, a lot of potential there, but boy, I'd rather trade back a few spots. If you're going to take a Sweat or a Burns or any other defensive line, I might even put like Cleveland Farrell, Christian Wilkins out of Clemson in those next spots. I'm not saying I would take them at seven over some of the offensive line options that'll be there. So for the guys, no matter who is available, Quinnen Williams one, Bosa two, Oliver three, Josh Allen four, and then I'm probably not drafting a defensive lineman.
So do you expect any of those four guys to be available when the Jags pick seven?
I don't know. I expect is a tough one, right? I mean, here's the thing. Quarterbacks, out of the last 11 first-round quarterbacks, 10 of them were selected by teams that traded up to get them, right? So that's a big question. Does someone trade up to get Dwayne Haskins? Does someone trade up to get Daniel Jones and push another good player down the line? Do the Giants go offensive line? You know, I could see phone in the first five picks. I could see in the first four picks, they're all gone if Kyler Murray doesn't come off the board. I do think it's possible one of them is there. There's so much buzz about the Jets loving Ed Oliver. It's either true or it's one of the big late, you know, in the process smoke screens, and they're trying to get another Ed Oliver type team or a loving team to move up to get him. But, you know, I don't think Williams is going to be there. I don't think Bosa is going to be there. I don't think Oliver is going to be there for them. And I guess Josh Allen may be the most likely, but I really, it's so tough. I'll say Devin White, one other quarterback, those four guys all off the board. That's what the Jags are going to be facing, the choice of none of them.
Mike, where do you think Rashawn Gary ends up? Could he be the tumbler
else,
tonight?
Hayes, I don't know. And here I am sitting here. The Michigan film scout and telling you Rashawn Gary can't play. So many people think he can. So many people think that Chase Winovich not only succeeded, but put up good numbers and has his stock on the rise because Gary dealt with all the double teams up in Michigan. His own teammate Devin Bush said, "Oh, you're going to choose between me and Gary? Go take Rashawn Gary. He's a better player than I am." So, you know, could he tumble? Yes. There's always a guy who tumbles for no particular reason. This guy would have a particular reason with 3.5 sacks. I mean, they got Yannick Ngakoue after he led the Big Ten with 13 sacks in the third round. Why is Rashawn Gary with 3.5 sacks in the same conference worth the 7th overall pick? I don't think he is. So, yes, I do think, you know, what's the tumble? I don't think he's on the board past, say, the 20th pick in the draft, but at one point he was talked about as pretty locked in the top five even. You know, and look, could the Raiders take him at four? Yes, they could, right? I'm not going to tell you that I know exactly where he's going to go, but I do think he could slide out of there for a little bit.
All right, good stuff, Mike. Well, we will check in with you one more time around 5:30 this afternoon. Thank you again for joining us.
Look forward to it.
Absolutely. All right. So we've broken down the offensive linemen, the defensive linemen that the Jaguars might take. We will also chat about tight ends with Mike coming up in that 5 o'clock hour. But the Jaguars, we've talked a lot about right tackle. The Jaguars might believe it's Cedric Oboye. He is their starting right tackle. Hayes caught up with him yesterday. We will let you hear that one-on-one interview next on 1010XL 92.5 FM. Little Van Morrison for you on this Old Rock Thursday. Always a Stanley Pool Thursday on the Frangie Show. If you're wondering where Frank Frangie is, well, don't worry. He doesn't have the day off. He is going to be hosting that Jaguars draft show that comes up at 7 o'clock with Tony Baselli and Jeff Logman. So meanwhile, Hayes Carlin, Tony Smith, and myself, Lauren Brooks, with you live from Daly's Place. Thanks, as always, to Andrew Gibson back at 1010XL headquarters and our on-site engineer, Tom Champion, for making it all happen right here. Hayes, you caught up with new Jaguar Cedric Oboye. First and foremost, did you find anything out about him other than football?
Yeah, I found out he's a pretty big pop culture guy, like several of us, Tony included in that. So we talked a little Game of Thrones, a little Avengers as well. So today's actually Cedric's birthday. So
happy birthday,
yeah,
Cedric.
So happy birthday,
yes,
Cedric. And while he is certainly going to be intrigued by what the Jaguars do at 7.
For sure.
Because it could have a major impact on his career. He said he's going to try to – I think he said he was going to go out with his girlfriend and maybe watch Endgame and get ready for –
That's what I'd be doing if I were him, that's for sure.
Get ready for Game of Thrones on Sunday.
And he is hoping that his phone does not blow up tonight, because if it does, that means that the Jaguars have taken a tackle and people are telling him, uh-oh, you're probably not the starter.
I don't know. Would you text somebody if they took her? Like,
I
would.
Guess you're right.
I would think his phone would blow up if they took, like, Hawkinson.
That's a good point.
But I guess you just never know. I guess it depends on what kind of friends he has.
I know. We don't know his friends.
Well, we will find out what the Jaguars do around probably 9:15 tonight. I did the math. If the draft starts at 8:05 and every team takes the 10 minutes, the Jaguars will be selecting at 9:15. If, obviously, some teams go a little faster than that, then it'll be before that. But either way, Hayes caught up with new Jaguars player Cedric Oboye. I was going to say new Jaguars right tackle, but we don't really know exactly where he'll be. We're going to assume, though, right tackle. But here is Hayes sitting down one-on-one with Cedric Oboye.
We're pleased to be joined with Jaguars right tackle Cedric Oboye here on 1010XL and 92.5 FM. Man, it's a pleasure to meet you. How's it going so far?
Going good. You know, I'm getting acclimated to the city. So far, so good. Great weather. Can't be happier.
I heard a funny story that when they wanted to sign you, Tim had to rush to the airport at 6 a.m. before you got on your flight. What was that process like?
Yeah, I had an event I had to go to in Dallas, and I told them, hey, is there any way I can get a flight earlier to get back? So to make it happen, actually, I signed at the hospital. So I did my physical. They brought the paperwork to the hospital, and I signed there, 6 in the morning. I was on the next flight, 7 a.m., back to Dallas, and made it to the event. So it was a crazy experience, but we got it signed.
What appealed to you about the Jaguars? What was sort of their pitch to you?
Yeah, it was really what I was looking. I knew that I wanted to be a right tackle. So I was looking at teams who needed right tackle only, and I didn't want to come in and have the possibility of competing for left and right. I wanted there to be a solid left tackle there already. And you know, I had some options at left and right. I saw just that Jacksonville needed a right tackle, and I wanted to come in and compete for it.
This is an administration that the head coach has significant offensive line coaching experience in Doug Marrone, George Warhop, veteran offensive line coach. How appealing was that?
Very. O-line guys, Warhop, actually, I remember during the draft process, he had the Buccaneers, and I thought I was going to go there in the second round. I went a little before them, but I thought I was going to be with him. I liked him. He was one of my favorite guys coming out. And now getting to work with him, I'm excited. I'm going to learn from him. I'm just going to work.
Why does right tackle fit you best from your skill set? Why do you like that spot the best?
Yeah, when I went back and looked at my career, even in college, I just realized that right tackle is my position. I felt more comfortable. I used to tell myself, you got to play left tackle. That's what you're supposed to do. So I would just try that, and it's not my position. I'm a right tackle, and I'm here to show them that I'm a right tackle.
What kind of strides do you try and make as a player in the voluntary portion of phase one?
Yeah, man, right now it's just a new system. You got to learn the plays. It's very important to know what you're doing. Coaches, they know that. I mean, players know that. You got to know what you're doing, so learn the plays. Also get in shape, and then also get acclimated with all the players and the camaraderie.
Cedric, was there anybody that reached out to you, any of the offensive linemen, when you signed? Anybody that sort of has not taken you under their wing because you're a veteran, but kind of giving you a heads up as to what to expect?
Yeah, this offseason, me, Jeremy Parnell, and Cam Robinson trained together, us three. So, actually, obviously, Jeremy was the right tackle last year, and he told me what to expect. He told me great things about the city, organization. He told me to work, and, I mean, just us through working out this offseason, it helped a lot. And also me and Cam working out helped a lot.
Have you had any interaction with Nick Foles yet?
Just hi, you know, walking by, how you doing, you know, introduction. Not anything. I mean, right now we have different groups working out, so we don't really see each other much. But just hi, you know, how you doing, and that kind of stuff.
Do you like the offensive philosophy? This has been a run-heavy franchise. We'll see what John DeFilippo, the new offensive coordinator, wants to do. But are you intrigued by the style of play?
Yeah. If you're O-lineman, you like run-heavy offenses. You like to move people. You like to run the ball because that's because of you. Usually good running offenses is because of the O-line and the running back. So I'm excited to see Coach Flip and see what he has for us and just work and keep working.
Will you pay any attention to the draft on Thursday? Are you a guy that likes to watch that and see how it unfolds?
Usually I do this year. Probably won't. You know, my birthday that day, actually, so I'm going to be with my girl and just and dinner. And just whatever happens. Obviously, I know right tackle is a need for the team. So if they get a guy there, he's got to compete with me for that spot. And they said the best five plays, so the best five will play.
Happy birthday. What plans do you have for your birthday?
Yeah, probably just dinner, and then Friday, got to see the Avengers.
who are you hoping kills Thanos?
It don't matter to me, man. Just need my boys to come back from the dead, you know?
Absolutely. Which one has to come back from the dead? Black Panther, Spider-Man?
Black Panther, Spider-Man. Those two actually are the first to come to my head.
Are you a Game of Thrones guy as well?
I am. Okay. So Sunday, it's going to be a good weekend. It's going to be a good birthday, then Game of Thrones, and then Avengers. It's a good weekend.
Who do you want to see sit on the Iron Throne at the end of Game of Thrones?
Good question. Everybody likes Snow, so I'll say Snow.
Yeah. Cedric Obwehi, it's a pleasure meeting you, and certainly best of luck. Thank you for taking the time to speak with us today.
Appreciate it. No problem. Thank
you. Well, you know, we go till 7, Tony, so now I think we owe it to the fans to sit here for the next 2 hours and 20 minutes and break down Game of Thrones and the Avengers Endgame.
Let's do it. So, anybody but Cersei. Yeah. That's the club I'm in.
Right. I agree. I think it was first off, it's cool just that it's always interesting to know what the players are into, what interests them, and so hopefully he'll enjoy it. I do think it's interesting that here's somebody that was taken in the first round, projected to be a left tackle. He looks like a left tackle. Standing next to him, he looks way more like Cam Robinson from a build standpoint than he does Jeremy Parnell. And I thought that was interesting that he said that he's been working out in the offseason. He was working out with Cam Robinson and Jeremy Parnell. But he looks more like a left tackle. So I thought it was intriguing that he's kind of come, you know, to having the realization in his career that skill set wise, he really feels like the right side is best for him. Got along great with George Warhop in the lead up to his draft. Warhop was with Tampa Bay, really liked him. So, look, I mean, we'll see. I think in the NFL, you have to take your coaching acumen, which for this franchise right now, their specialty is offensive line. The head coach is a former offensive line coach, and they have a very experienced position coach. So I think you take that and see, can you bargain shop a little bit, fill that spot, develop it with the coaching talent that you have? It'd be a gamble, but it'd be interesting to see if the Jaguars do not go right tackle with their first two selections in this draft. What does that tell us about how they feel about Cedric Obwehi and second-year player Will Richardson?
Certainly could mean something, right? And it'll be talked about for months and months and months until we get into training camp, and then we'll see who's going to win that battle. My guess would be that they feel pretty good about Will Richardson, who they felt good about last year in the draft and thought that they had gotten a value when they got him in the fourth round. He didn't play much, and it's just hard to tell how much of a value he even could have been for this team. So maybe they feel better about Will Richardson than everybody outside of the building feels about him. And if you're Cedric Obwehi at this point in your career, you do what you're asked to do, you know, and if there are teams saying we want to take a look at your right tackle, you say, yes, sir. You know, let's take a look at it at right tackle and see how that fits for me. I will make it work because obviously it didn't work for him as a first round pick in Cincinnati. You do what you got to do to stay in the league.
I believe Dave Caldwell earlier this week used the term, we have no gaping holes.
Mm-hmm.
So certainly they feel like between Richardson and Obwehi, they have a guy who can play right tackle. Now, is that the guy that they want? Protecting Nick Foles as one of those five guys doing that we will certainly find out as the draft plays out both tonight, tomorrow night, and on Saturday. All right, the Jaguars have their quarterback in Nick Foles, and if he had control over the draft. Who would he select? This was a lot of fun for me. We will try to predict that next on 1010 XL 92.5 FM. Welcome back to the Frangie Show on a Stanley Pools Thursday. Hayes Carline, Tony Smith, and Lauren Brooks with you live from Daly's Place, just a few hours away from the kickoff of the 2019 NFL Draft. That starts at 8 o'clock. But, of course, our draft special with Frank Fangie, Tony Baselli, and Jeff Lagerman starts at 7 o'clock. If Nick Foles, good old Saint Nick, was put in charge of the draft, who would he select? What would the draft look like if Nick got to make all of the selections? With the 7th overall pick in the first round of the 2019 NFL Draft, Tony, who does Nick Foles select?
This is interesting because I think virtually everyone listening to us right now would scream at their radio, TJ Hawkinson, and I'm not sure that's the answer.
Okay.
I'm really not sure that's the answer. I keep going to the way Philadelphia built it. They had Jason Peters. They drafted Lane Johnson. So as much as he's been comfortable throwing to the tight end, I think Nick Foles is a bright enough guy to realize that the reason he had the opportunity to throw to three different tight ends and have time to throw to Alshon Jeffrey and do everything that they wanted to do in that Philadelphia offense is because they built their line and they built it right and were willing to invest in it, even in drafts where, hey, we have an opportunity to maybe get a premier player at the tight end or wide receiver position. They were still committed to, we're building along the lines of scrimmage. With that in mind, I think it agrees with what I think is likely to happen tonight. I think it's Jonah Williams. I really do. And I think if Nick Foles was making the call, I think he'd tell you, give me the best offensive lineman that is available to me along a group that they need one more guy. They need one more guy to feel really good about that group up front, and they don't only need one more guy, they need a guy to play tackle up front, which is one of the two more important positions up there. And I think even with all the experience he's had throwing to tight ends, he realizes how much more valuable it is to know I got 3 seconds than it is that I know I can throw it to that guy 65 times over the course of a season.
Right now, the Jaguars have Jeff Swaim, James O'Shaughnessy, Ben Koyak, Pharaoh McKeever at tight end.
TJ.
He's taking a tight end.
Don't I think Pharaoh this way.
I think, yeah. I apologize, Pharaoh. I think he is. I think you're taking Hawkinson. I mean, look, it's at least at right tackle, you've got two guys that might be able to be serviceable. You've got nothing at tight end. It is an expansion level group of tight ends. If they added a 33rd team to the league tomorrow and conducted an expansion draft, and that team had an expansion roster, this is what those tight ends would look like. And to me, if you're Nick Foles, I think you don't have a dominant wide receiver. You've got a running back that kind of who knows what he's going to be in year three. They don't have a dynamic running back that catches the ball. I think you got to take TJ Hawkinson. I mean, he's got it's great if he can drop back and have some time, but if no one is open, he is eventually going to be sacked. So I think you take Hawkinson, and I think you find a guy that can be a security blanket. And look, even if, you know, Didi and, you know, Chark and Cole aren't winning on the outside, Marquise when he comes back, you feel like you've got a guy there. And Hawkinson will help in the run game. And when he doesn't run around, he can help block in the pass game. So I do think he helps in a variety of areas too. But I think Nick Foles has got to be looking at it saying, get me somebody who on 3rd and 8 I can throw it to.
I agree, and I also think he's saying, get me somebody where it's not going to be 3rd and 8. Hopefully it's going to be 3rd and 2 because we've been able to run the ball more successfully. I also have TJ Hawkinson if I'm Nick Foles. I certainly get what Tony's saying, though, and I also understand the need at wide receiver. That's why, with the 38th pick, if I'm Nick Foles, I'm taking wide receiver Terry McLaurin out of Ohio State. And then in my 69th pick, 3rd round, I'm going to take offensive tackle Bobby Evans out of Oklahoma. So now I have satisfied a tackle, a wide receiver, and a tight end. But I'm not done. I'm going to take another tight end if I'm Nick Foles, and I'm going to get Dawson Knox out of Ole Miss to add to it with the 98th pick. That would be the 2nd, 3rd round pick that they have. How am I doing so far?
I think Nick Foles is a great GM.
I was going to say, are you negotiating the yawn contract while we're doing all this?
I'm not taking – oh, absolutely, because I'm not taking any defensive players. I'm then, with my 4th round selection, 109th pick, I'm going to go running back Benny Snell. Then I'm also going to take another running back, this guy out of Temple, Ryquell Armstead, with the sixth round, 178th pick, because you know what? You can never have too many backs. And I'm going to go back to wide receiver with the seventh pick, the 236th, or seventh round, 236th pick.
Madness.
I'm going to go wide receiver, Lil Jordan Humphrey out of Texas.
Nick, get out of the room. Like, there are two sides to the ball, buddy.
No, no. If I'm Nick Foles, that's what it's going to look like. I need one offensive lineman, two wide receivers, two tight ends, and two running backs.
Look, I totally get it. I keep looking at it and saying, I understand the expansion level deal with the tight ends, and it's not a good group of tight ends. I don't think right tackle is much above expansion level right now. I really don't. We have no idea what Will Richardson is. Cedric Opoihi is an NFL bust that's getting another chance. Like, he's Trey Flowers. And Trey Flowers was okay, serviceable, which is how I feel about where they are at the tight end position. Serviceable. And if I'm going to choose which position in the National Football League I would rather not be serviceable at, it would be offensive tackle than it would be tight end, which I think that's the direction I would like to see the team go, especially when that guy that's playing left defensive end for him is the one that's going to be smashing me in the face. And he's had Lane Johnson guarding that side. This is a Pro Bowl level guy. I think Nick Foles knows exactly why he's had the level of success he's had. And that's not to say the tight end hasn't helped, but I think he knows the offensive line and that play caller has been a large reason as to why he's had the success he's had when he's been given the opportunities up there in Philly.
I just don't see how you could just discount Josh Wells like you just did. No, it's look,
well, you discounted Pharaoh.
They obviously they're two areas of deficiency. And again, I think this is where you do have to, if you're Dave Caldwell and Tom Coughlin, you have to ask yourself, okay, what kind of coaching do we have on our staff? Okay, Doug Marrone, your head coach, has coached offensive line throughout his entire career. You've got a very seasoned offensive line coach now in George Warhop. I think you're gambling on, can they find something in Obwehi that Cincinnati was unable to? Can they develop Will Richardson, who they did like enough to select in the fourth round? I just don't think they have that at tight end. I mean, let's just look at the history. Have the tight ends done anything over the last 6 years that have they played above their head at any point?
Mercedes, I mean, one time in London.
It's been, but my...
Well, I think it's hard to tell with
outside
Blake.
Of a game here or there.
Yeah.
I mean, it seems like that's a position where you might need more talent, natural talent.
Right.
Because are you really pulling everything you can pull out of that group? At right tackle, I think you have to sort of hope that between the guys that you have in that room, you can develop Richardson and Obwehi.
Absolutely. We will get into more of that as the show goes along, and certainly Hayes has a mock draft out there, so we will talk about that a little later in the show. But coming up next, Pete Prisco is digging around Nashville for the latest rumors. He will join us next on 1010XL 92.5 FM. It is time now for the Prisco Report, brought to you by Showtime Sports Cards and Collectibles for the best in vintage cards, as well as terrific autographed items. Head to Showtime at the corner of Phillips and Shad Road, or log on to ShowtimeSportsCardsOfJax.com. As we welcome in Pete Prisco live in Nashville. Pete, how is Music City treating you?
It's crazy here, let me tell you. It's wild. They both did a great job taking over Broadway, the entire street, and it was rocking last night. So it's going to be even crazier tonight.
Well, speaking of that, we are live from Daly's Place, and they just cranked up the music here. You can probably hear that in the background. So it's going to be crazy here as well. All right, let's start with the number one pick. Will it be someone other than Kyler Murray?
It can be. You know, my information was that the scouting brass in Arizona wanted to take Nick Bosa or Quinnen Williams, and I think the ownership is pushing in the other direction. So, look, there's so much information out there right now. I had an agent tell me that the family has been told it's going to be Kyler Murray. Then I had a general manager I talked to said he's hearing that it might not be. So I don't think they know yet. And it's probably going to be Kyler Murray, but there's a chance it could be Nick Bosa or Quinnen Williams.
Hey, Pete, it says if it's not Kyler, is there a storyline developing here where if Kyler Murray falls to a certain point, it may not be worth his while to play football. Is that something that we should watch for if he doesn't go one? Or do you feel like if Arizona passes on him, maybe somebody goes up to three with the Jets to take him, or maybe Gruden takes him at four?
I don't think Gruden takes him. I hear the Raiders like Haskins more than they do Kyler Murray. So I think what would happen is, I think if it, in this scenario, he would fall a little bit and somebody might, like Miami, might trade up to go get him. And then you become, okay, the Lions are willing to trade out of eight, so maybe they go to eight to get him, and then it's not big a deal. But if he falls, you know, into 15 or 16, 13, 14, 15 or 16, then it might be. So, yeah, that's always a card he's going to be able to play. And, you know, look, you hear differing things on the kid. Does he love football? He says he does. But, you know, it remains to be seen. And there are still a lot of questions about him. And for all those questions, it's funny how every other quarterback gets picked to shreds, and they automatically anointed this kid as the next great thing, which is strange to me. And I think a lot of it has to do with groupthink.
How would you split up the odds on what you would expect to potentially happen with Oakland?
Well, you know, in talking to some people in Oakland, you know, there's people there that think they should go defense, and stay away from the offensive players. And I've heard that Gruden is willing to take another year with Derek Carr because he gave him some weapons and he improved the offensive line and see where he stands from there. Whereas, you know, there might be a push from some other people, maybe Mayock, who likes Dwayne Haskins, to go get the quarterback. So I think if I were the Raiders, I'd go defense. Maybe, you know, Ed Oliver, Quinn and Williams, if one of them is there, and then come back and get another pass rusher. And then maybe if I want to get a runner late, maybe Jacobs with the final pick in the first round. But they have to get better on defense.
Pete Prisco with us from CBS Sports, live up in Nash, Vegas. Pete, how many quarterbacks do you think will go in round one?
Four. I think, you know, whatever order, but I think it's going to be Murray, Haskins, Locke, and Daniel Jones. And you know, everybody poo-poos Daniel Jones. And it's funny because when you talk to people in the league, they liked him a lot more than the perception of him outside in the media and with the draft analysts. So I think there will be four. I think, you know, and then you might see, you know, if one is sitting there at 20-something, that a team trades back in to go get one because you get that fifth-year option and it's a cheap quarterback. So I do think four will go in the first round.
What do you make of Washington and all the stories coming out about who actually is running the war room in terms of the first-round pick? Do you see the Redskins as a trade-up candidate? And if so, who do you think they're eyeing?
Well, I think, you know, there's a split there. You hear Jay Gruden likes, you know, Daniel Jones, and you hear that the ownership and Daniel Snyder likes Dwayne Haskins, who, by the way, is from that area. He's a kid that played his football there. So they could be seeing that from that standpoint as well. But, look, there was also some thought that there was leakage of that by the Raiders so that they could get somebody to jump up to the Jets pick. And if they go up to the Jets pick and take Haskins, then the Raiders will be sitting there with their choice of Ed Oliver or Quinn and Williams. So for me, I think, you know, you got to be careful with some of this information because I think a lot of it's being leaked to use to a team's advantage.
Pete, where does Montez Sweat fit in potentially with teams on their board for the teams who didn't eliminate him because of any kind of medical evaluation that it sounds like turned out to be just flat out wrong with the condition that he was dealing with?
Yeah, I wouldn't go necessarily believe in that report because I've heard from teams that definitely have him off the board. So there is information that, you know, I think that's an agent trying to drum up his, you know, do the best thing for his client, which I'd expect him to do. But there are teams that have taken him off the board and are concerned about that heart issue. So I think he's going to fall a little bit. Initially we thought all the pass rushers would go early, Burns and him and also the kid from Michigan. And now it looks like that they might not. Rashawn Gary has the shoulder injury and didn't play very well last year. And now he got Sweat with the medical issue. And Cleveland Farrell, I keep hearing people are a little lukewarm on him as well. So I don't necessarily think those guys are going to go as high as we thought. The guy that will is Brian Burns. I still think he's going to be the first, you know, of those, that grouping, he's going to be the first of that group to go.
Pete, we've been asking you this for a while now. Who do you think the Jaguars should take? And also, who would you take if you were General Manager Dave Caldwell and Executive Vice President of Football Operations Tom Coughlin?
You know, it's funny. I saw you guys at Hawkinson, and I think a lot of that had to do with what Tom said the other day about Hawkinson, or a complete tight end, and how you can block and what you can do in the game has changed. And so I'd be okay with that because I think Hawkinson's a good player. I think that's real high for that position, particularly when it's a deep class. Now, a couple things I have heard. I've heard the Jaguars' offensive line coach loves Juwan Taylor, and that could have some influence there. And you also know that Doug Marrone has ties to Jonah Williams. And Ed Oliver is still in play. I just don't think Ed Oliver is going to get to the Jaguars. I just, in my latest mock draft, I have the Giants taking Jonah Williams at 6, so I don't know if he gets to him. So in that scenario, it comes down to Hawkinson and Taylor. And the question becomes, do they go with the tight end, which they need, or do they go with the tackle and put him in at right tackle and not worry about that position and come back in the second or third round and get a tight end? So I think it's going to be one of two guys. But if Oliver was there, I think they'd have to give strong consideration at Oliver.
Pete, do you think the Jaguars will field offers for a trade down? And if so, how far, what range do you expect them to move to?
Yeah, that would make sense because I think you could move down a couple of spots and still end up with one of those two guys and maybe get an extra pick here and there because, if Oliver goes and he's not there, then you want either Taylor, Jonah Williams, or Hawkinson. Then I think you can move down and still get one of those guys. So, yeah, I do think that's a definite possibility and something that they would do if given the opportunity. But remember, it takes two to tango when you want to trade down, and that's sometimes hard to get done.
Pete, I saw just a ranking list, where they assign a number, whatever it happens to be, that compared, when you look at the grade overall for T.J. Hawkinson to O.J. Howard, say in a recent draft, that the numbers were exactly the same. Do you think that they, maybe not similar types of players, but that in an overall, what you can expect to get out of them, that's a fair comparison between the two?
George Kittle's a better comparison, I think.
Okay.
And not just because he went to Iowa, it's just because I think he's a better comparison. And, again, I've said this with you guys before, the comparisons to Gronk are way off base. Look, he's a good blocker, but Gronk was a great blocker. Gronk was a physical presence, and this kid's a physical presence, but not quite to that level. So I think when you look at that, he's more George Kittle than he is any of those guys. But that's a good pick. But do you pick that at number 7 overall in the draft, particularly when you can come back and maybe Fant falls to you or Smith falls to you or one of those other tight ends is there? I don't think so. I think if you got a grade comparable on a tight end to a tackle, you take the tackle because the value of position is there. He's going to be, if you get the right guy, he's going to be around for a decade. You don't necessarily know if that's the case with a tight end. You would hope that. But I think that you're taking a little bit of risk in taking that tight end at number 7.
Pete Prisco with us live from Nashville from CBS Sports. Pete, here's my one kind of frustration with the Jaguars fan base. They've complained about offense and specifically tight end for so long. And here's a chance to maybe draft an elite tight end, but 7's too high? That doesn't really make sense to me.
Well, but they also complain about their offensive line more so than anything. And I think when you look at that, they've had problems on that offensive line. And if you can get a bookend tackle to stick in there, and if Cam Robinson develops into what they think he can develop into, then all of a sudden you look at that offensive line and you go, wow, okay, this is a pretty darn good offensive line group. And when you can win the line of scrimmage, I think it helps open up other things, A. And B, the tight end class is so deep. I don't think there's going to be a significant difference between T.J. Hawkinson in the tight end that goes fourth. I just don't. I think there's going to be a lot of guys in this class that are productive, some of them maybe even more so as pass catchers. One of the things you heard late in the process was that Fant had moved back ahead of him. Because, for most of the season, going into the season last year, Fant was the guy that most people were targeting, and he moved ahead of him because he's a better pass catcher. So I get it. I understand they haven't had a great pass catching tight end in a long time. They thought Mercedes Lewis was that, but he clearly was not. But I just think that that's pressing the position a little bit at number 7.
How good will DK Metcalf be, and where do you think he gets selected?
I worry about him. I think back end of the first round, if at all in the first round. I talked to GM today. He thought that maybe no wide receivers go in the first round. Marquise Brown is the one I'm most intrigued by, but he's got that foot injury, although I hear it's okay. And he only weighs 165 pounds. But Metcalf, straight-line guy. I mean, in this league, you've got to be able to have wiggle, get off of the press, and be able to go inside, do things. Can't be a straight-line strength guy, or you're not going to get, you're not going to get open in this league. So I think I'm a little worried about him. I do think he might go in the back end of the first round, maybe the Colts. I mean, they just signed Funchess, and they need another, you know, guy that can stick around for a long time. He's only on a one-year deal, so maybe the Colts take him in that spot.
Yeah, I'm with you, Pete. I don't expect Ed Oliver to be available when the Jags are picking at 7. I think he'll be picked before that, and me personally, I'd run the card out of the podium if Ed Oliver was available there. But what are you hearing about, if anything, still? Look, this whole ridiculous thing with the jacket on the sideline, if there's any kind of flag with Ed Oliver, it would be character concerns. Are you still hearing anything about that?
No, that was more, you know what, the NFL people I talked to said that was more on the coach. You know, that was more on the head coach there than it
sure.
was him. And so, no, they're not at all upset with him when it comes to that. So, and that was put to rest a long time ago. He's a good kid. He plays hard. He plays hard all the time. And that's one thing you like to see. So I don't think that's an issue at all, Tony.
Pete, I see that the weather is not necessarily great up there in Nashville. They might have to move the draft indoors. You've lobbied for Tony Boselli to be inducted into the Hall of Fame. Can you lobby for Jacksonville to get the draft, please?
Yeah, that would be great. Right there in Daly's place, they can, you know, once they build that parking lot out, they can blow it out. It'd be great. You know, the only problem is there's enough hotel room. You know, they've had that problem before when they had a Super Bowl. And then, granted, the draft isn't the Super Bowl, but there are a lot of people here. And, you know, anybody, if you guys haven't been to Nashville lately, this town is booming. I mean, it is booming. They got, they must have more rooftop bars per capita than any other city in the world. It's unbelievable. All these country guys have built these bars with all rooftops. It's incredible. You know, it used to be, there'd be maybe, you know, you come here, you'd have a good time on Broadway, there'd be about 15 bars. There's probably 50 now. It's unbelievable how much it's grown. So, and that's the other thing. You know, Jacksonville, I love Jacksonville. I lived there for the longest time I've ever lived anywhere in my life, and I had a great time there. But Jacksonville needs to get with the times to develop downtown, okay? There's my political message. You develop downtown, and I think Shad Khan will do it. But there's got to be a destination where you could, if you live at the beach and you get in an Uber and you want to go down there and there's 8 restaurants and 15 bars and you want to go bopping around, you should be able to do that. And that right now there's nowhere where you can do that downtown, and that's sad.
Pete, do you think Rashawn Gary falls tonight?
Yes, for a variety of reasons. I think he never played to his athleticism, one. Two, he's got the shoulder injury. That's always concerning. And three, he scored 9 on the Wonderlic. And you know, the Wonderlic score, and everybody on Twitter goes nuts when you reveal the Wonderlic scores. The Wonderlic score doesn't tell you if a guy can play football, if he's football smart or not. You know what it tells you? It tells you even though he did the prep work, or he didn't do the prep work to get through it. Because those guys get prepped for that test now. And when you get prepped for the test, it's almost like when you go to the combine and you fail a drug test. You know it's coming. That means you're an idiot. You know, from a preparation standpoint, not a stupidity standpoint, but although some people would argue both. And so from that standpoint, I'd be a little concerned about him. And that's another thing, one thing else, by the way, with Murray. He scored 20 on the Wonderlic test. 20. And that means you're prepped for it, and you scored 20. That's a concern because either you didn't do the prep or you're not good at taking those kind of tests. And it doesn't mean, because Marino did it. Marino had a terrible Wonderlic score. But back in the day, he was the kind of guy that would go in there, oh, I don't need this, and he'd check them all off, you know. He didn't care. But nowadays, these guys prep for it because they know it's out there, and getting a 20 for a quarterback is not good.
Pete, looking at the offensive linemen, and certainly it feels like the Jags could have, likely will have their pick of the litter if they want to go offensive line in this draft. Who is the best fit for them between Dillard, Taylor, and Williams?
I think Williams is probably the most polished and ready to go. I think Taylor probably has the most upside. I'm not as high on Dillard as everybody else, but I think those two. I think if I had to rank them, I'd probably go Williams 1 and Taylor 2 from being able to play right away. Now, the guy with the highest upside is probably Taylor. Taylor could be a force. I think he's got rid of his baby fat. He's become just a much better player. And he came to Florida as not a big recruit, which tells you that the growth is happening. And so I think from an upside standpoint, Taylor's probably got a chance to be the better player. But if you want to be sound and solid sooner, then I think Jonah Williams probably is a better pick.
Hey, Pete, one of my final questions for you. What is your schedule like this week up at the draft? Besides, obviously, the CBS Sports stuff, do you have other stuff, or are you really trying to talk to a lot of people and get a lot of the rumors out there?
Yeah, I've been doing that all day today, and, you know, it's Lions. you know, you got to try. You got to try and trust who the people you know in this league for a long time. And I'll say this: a lot of guys hide at this time of day. I mean, in the last probably 3 hours, guys have gone inside the bunkers. But you know, you got to trust your sources. You got to trust your information. And if you're right, you're right. If you're not, you know what? I trust my information that I got from Arizona that they would take Bosa. But if they don't, I think the ownership will step in and change them and force them to take, the quarterback, which sometimes can happen.
Pete, how good do you think when we get to the end of tonight, how good will the top 10 picks be going into Friday?
What's left on the board, you mean?
Yeah.
I think the second round is the value. I think there's a ton of value in the second round. I mean, I think you're going to see a ton of receivers go in the second round. And there's a bunch of tight ends that can go in the second round. So I think there's great value in the second round. The real value is second and third round draft. So everybody's going to point to tonight. Keep an eye on tomorrow. That's when good players are going to go a lot lower than they should.
Will Jeffrey Simmons be one of those guys we're talking about going into Friday as opposed to the end of round one?
I think he goes at the end of round one. And you know, it wouldn't shock me to see a team like New England take him. And New England will take him, let him get right, get healed, and he's a top 10 talent. I mean, when you watch Montez Sweat on tape, this is the kid that shows up, play in and play out. So, no, I think a smart team would take Jeffrey Simmons and maybe even Green Bay at the back end of the first round as well, because that kid's a force.
All right, Pete. Well, thanks so much for joining us. We know you've got a lot to do, but certainly we look forward to recapping who the Jaguars have taken in the 2019 NFL Draft next week with you.
You got it. Take care, guys.
Absolutely. Enjoy that country music for me. That was Pete Briscoe. Thanks again to our friends at Showtime Sports Cards and Collectibles. If you want vintage cards or autographed items, head to Showtime at the corner of Phillips and Shad Road or log on to ShowtimeSportsCardsOfJax.com. We're going to check in with Mike Dempsey for one final time here in a few minutes. But just to recap kind of what Pete said as far as that number one overall pick, to me, it sounds like we're getting closer and closer to it not being Kyler Murray. Are y'all getting that vibe?
I don't. I think what we've heard the whole time is likely what's going to happen. I still expect Kyler Murray to be the pick when everything is said and done there at number one overall. I think it's a lot more interesting from a draft perspective if he's not. So maybe it would be fun if Kyler Murray winds up not being the guy. I'll say this, from a Jaguar perspective, if you have any hope of one of these defensive linemen being available to you, Kyler Murray needs to be the number one pick. Like, from a Jaguar perspective, if you're on the defensive line train, you don't need this with pick number one tonight, because I don't see any way that one of those defensive linemen, those four premier guys, falls to the Jags at seven if Kyler Murray isn't one of those first six picks. And I think there's a real chance, if he doesn't go number one, that he does slide, even outside of the top 10 when everything is said and done.
And that's the worst-case scenario, what Tony laid out, because what if there are no quarterbacks selected in the top six? I mean, I think Murray and Haskins are going in the top six.
Yeah, you might not even get your choice alignment.
But that's what I'm saying. You may miss on Hockenson. You may miss on the top offensive line, both. So, I mean, it is – you could end up – if that happens, if Kyler Murray does not go number one and he falls beyond seven, then you could be looking at Bosa, Quinnen Williams, Josh Allen, Ed Oliver, T.J. Hockenson, and we'll just say Jonah Williams is the first six picks in this draft.
Certainly.
That would be a disaster.
Yeah, and it would be a disaster in the sense that, right, you're going to get your second pick at offensive lineman. You're not going to get any of the defensive linemen. But you could take a quarterback.
You could.
But then again, oh, wait, they already have
And maybe at that point you could make a move and
right.
trade, obviously. But that is not the ideal. I think you'd like to see at least two go. I still think there's a chance that if the Raiders take Haskins at four, I think the Giants might panic and take their guy at six, whether that's Drew Lock or Daniel Jones, to think that you're going to be able to get a guy at 17 when you've got Denver, Cincinnati, possibly Detroit, certainly Miami, and certainly Washington as possibilities. Gettleman may say at that point, you know what, I'll get my edge rusher at 17. I've got to lock in my quarterback. That would be the ideal, because now if you're the Jaguars, you basically have the fourth pick in the draft because they're not going to consider a quarterback at seven.
Well, and Drew Lock said he'd rather go 32nd than go number one to a bad team, and I certainly understand his line of thinking. You know, he's like, I'm fine with sitting behind Tom Brady.
Don't believe it.
I believe the mindset of I'd rather be successful long term than be unsuccessful right away and a team move on from me, you know, not be patient with me if I'm not good right away. I get that part of it. But I do wonder if a guy like Daniel Jones, if a guy like Drew Lock is sitting there going, we have absolutely no idea where we could go tonight.
None.
We could go in the first round, we could go really in the top 15, or we could go Friday night.
Oh yeah. It's a whirlwind of a night for them, right? Like, I think Kyler Murray's the only one that can feel pretty okay about where he fits into this whole process, but even that could be thrown out of kilter, obviously, if Arizona were indeed to go a different direction. And I think if you're Dwayne Haskins, you feel pretty good that you're going to go in the top half of the first round. I think the other guys, no idea. Oakland may love Drew Lock. They might, and they might love him enough to take him at four. But I don't think you can feel confident that they're going to take you at four. And if they don't, then I don't know that you can feel really good about how any of these teams feel about you if you're one of these, the third and fourth quarterbacks in most people's minds.
Well, and it's interesting, too, because Daniel Jones, Drew Lock, Kyler Murray, they're all going to be there at the draft. So if they're sliding.
Yeah, Dwayne's the only one that didn't go. Yeah.
Right, yeah. And that might have end up proving smart. We shall see. Or he could be the first quarterback taken off the draft or taken off the board, and maybe those three.
That would be something.
Go right, wouldn't it? I mean, what if the Cardinals all along have wanted Haskins? They just decided to send out other rumors. That's the part that's certainly fascinating. All right, Mike Dempsey will join us for the final time this evening from up in Nashville next on 1010XL 92.5 FM. Little Van Morrison on Old Rock Thursday on the Frangie Show. Frank Frangie will be with you from 7 to 10 o'clock with Jeff Logman and Tony Baselli for the Jaguars Draft Special. Meanwhile, now we head up to Nashville for one final time today to check in with Mike Dempsey. Mike, thanks for joining us again.
You're welcome, Lauren. If you can guess what I'm about to eat for a little early dinner, I will bring you one back to Jacksonville.
I will guess a Lunchable.
No. A Lunchable?
Lunchable is
chicken noodle soup.
Oh, okay. Lunchable is my go-to snack on the
road.
What
a low opinion of Nashville you have, Lauren. They're feeding them a Lunchable?
I don't know that he didn't grab it from the little area downstairs in the hotel. How do I know?
I am in the area downstairs in the hotel. We're about to go down Broadway here in a few minutes, but for now, no Lunchables, no Hattie's Chicken tonight. That's supposed to be on the menu for tomorrow, so that's nice. Apparently a big Nashville hotspot. Take it from Nashville native Tony Smith.
Is that the hot chicken?
That'll be
the
hot
chicken, yeah.
Okay.
Trust me, I don't
very
eat
nice.
Hot chicken. I'm talking a good game. I won't eat hot chicken. That's not me.
Well, enjoy your chicken noodle soup, and now I'm sad I don't get any. All right, we've broken down the possibilities of offensive line and defensive line. Is TJ Hockenson the only guy that the Jaguars would think about at tight end at number seven?
I think so. Now, look, I think so, but if they took Fant because they thought this guy's just the vastly superior offensive weapon, taking the run game out of the equation just in terms of a passing game weapon, I won't be upset if they did that. I'd be very surprised, though, because, I mean, Hockenson looks like such the philosophical fit, right? He's the guy who can do all the dirty work of Mercedes Lewis, but he can also do all the athletic work of a George Kittle in the passing game. He can give you both, and you don't get that in the total package all the time. So, yeah, I think he's the only tight end likely under consideration. Doesn't mean they take him because, again, tight end, there's some interesting mid-round prospects as well. But, you know, and big men are harder to come by. But if it's going to be an offensive skill player, he's the only one I can imagine with the seventh pick.
With the Jags, and again, we're asking you to speculate as to what you think their board might look like, but where do you think they would be the most upset if it wasn't available to them? One of those four premier defensive linemen, which maybe is what we expect anyway, but one of those four defensive linemen, the best offensive lineman on their board, or TJ Hockenson, what do you think would upset them the most?
I think my guess, is this a guess, Tone, would be that the linemen would be on the bottom of that list, because I don't know how much gap there is between the top at least two, if not three of them, right? So I think they could live in that circumstance. I think it would be the defensive lineman that would bother them the most, because there's, you know, when you find that rare talent, although maybe Hockenson is enough of a unicorn at that position where they feel like he was just so head and shoulders above everybody, they're kind of counting on him being there. No mocks really have him going in the top six. that could be the answer, but I'm going to say defensive line.
Mike, what do you think happens with Irv Smith tonight?
Oh, that's a good question, Hayes. Definitely, a candidate to get in there, maybe pick 25 through 32, somewhere in that range. But, you know, that range, a lot of people obviously mock him to the New England Patriots because Rob Gronkowski's retiring, and he seems like a good fit there. But keeping in mind, they drafted Gronk in the second round, and that same year they drafted Aaron Hernandez even later. So they've had a track record of finding guys later in the draft. I'm going to say he comes off the board somewhere after pick 25, but I'm going to say that that's like maybe a 60-40 proposition. I think there's a reasonable chance he's still one of the top Jaguar targets on the board, assuming they don't go tight end with seventh pick when we're resetting the board tomorrow morning.
And do you think if he's still on the board tomorrow, do you think if there's any chance the Jaguars move up to try and get him?
There's a chance, Lauren, but I just I don't know if they have enough draft capital to make too many moves like that. It would depend as well. What do they do with the seventh pick? You know, if they trade back and he's still on the board, then they've got extra draft capital. That'd be one thing. To me, I don't know. I don't know how likely a trade up is. He would be the tight end to trade up for, I would think, but I'm going to say it's not all that likely, in my opinion, that they would make a move for him.
You say it depends on what they would do with that seventh pick, so what do they do with the seventh pick?
If one of the top four defensive linemen is available, I think they go with the defensive line tone, and if not, I think it's O-line.
Is there a preference among the O-linemen for you?
Yeah, again, Jonah Williams, probably number one. We talked about that last hour a little bit. Versatility. Has had that pedigree and talked about as a future Pro Bowler for several years now. And he slid in the perception column, and now you're starting to see him mocked back up in the top 10 consistently. I think maybe NFL teams have had him there all along. He would be my preference if they're all available and the top four defensive linemen are off the board.
All right, well, there you have it. That is the last time we will check in with you for today, but I know you will be joining 1010 XL a lot tomorrow as well from up there in Nashville at the draft. We certainly hope you get good weather.
Thank you, Lauren. I hope all I need is good weather for the walk there and the walk back. I'll be in a nice covered studio the rest of the time. But we appreciate it. You guys are doing a great job, and I'll talk to you then.
All right. Thanks so much, Mike. That is Mike Dempsey from Jaguars today up in Nashville. And we certainly hope that the weather is good for the draft so they can keep it outside, not move it inside, and start it on time, most importantly. One quick thing on Jonah Williams, Hayes, that I know we discuss on the Frangie Show a lot leading up to the draft. Watching that national championship game, you weren't all that interested in him based off of how he did against some of those Clemson defensive linemen.
Yeah, and that's unfair. I mean, it's a small slice of his resume.
But that's who he'll be facing in the NFL.
But Cleveland Farrell just knocked him over. I thought it stood out, and I think that's a thing with Jonah that people question is his upper body strength, and he does have the arm length that is a concern, or certainly will be, I think, for some teams. So Jonah Williams plays with great technique. Obviously, he's a really unbelievable kid. When you hear people who've been around him in Alabama and teams that have interviewed him and really done their due diligence on him. So I understand all that. I'd be disappointed if it's Jonah Williams. I question, are you getting the same player that you got when you took Luke Jokel second overall, a guy that we all thought had the movement ability but just wasn't physically ready to go week in and week out against professional edge rushers. And it showed. I mean, we all remember Luke Jokel falling, on his rump, seemingly every other game. And when I saw what happened to Jonah Williams against Farrell in the national title game, that was the first image that went through my mind. So it's unfair to base everything on that one snap, but it does make you wonder, will that be a frequent occurrence? Will he have a Luke Jokel transition to the NFL? And if so, he's probably going to be a disappointing pick tonight.
See, and this brings me to where I actually feel like the Jaguars are in this draft. I think they're in a really bad spot. I do.
They shouldn't have beat the Dolphins.
They shouldn't beat the Dolphins, and they'd be sitting there waiting on one of these defensive linemen. It would just be which one is going to fall to them. And instead, they are in absolute no man's land in a draft where people don't feel great about the offensive line class. And maybe the next highest prospect is a tight end. And I think that says more about the draft outside of these defensive linemen than it does about T.J. Hockenson, considering the comparisons that you truly hear with T.J. Hockenson. I think they're in not a great spot for a team having to pick in the top 10 in this particular draft. I think 7 is the cutoff point for that first tier of players. Now, are they at the top of that second tier? Sure. And they get to pick their poison with what they want to do with that second tier. But they're picking number 7 in a draft where it feels like there are 5 premier guys, and it doesn't seem like they're going to have an opportunity to get one of those 5 guys.
Well, and that leads me to this. Matt Hayes from XL Primetime tweeted this morning. This is merely the most important draft in franchise history. Do you agree with that, Hayes?
No. No, it's not the most important in franchise history. I mean, is it important? Yes, they all are important. But, the move that's going to make or break this franchise for the next 2 to 5 years or 10 years is whether Nick Foles is any good.
Yeah.
If Nick Foles is good, then what they do tonight is it would be a nice highlight. It would supplement that. But if you're going to tell me right now Nick Foles is going to go to 4 Pro Bowls as a Jaguar, then tonight they can bomb tonight, and it's not going to matter. It's not going to sink them. So I don't think it's the most important. I mean, in my opinion, they're all important, but this one doesn't take on that kind of weight with me.
I think it's interesting, right? Because I think it may be, since the first one, the most important draft that Tom Coughlin's been involved in, because it does feel like his job potentially could be on the line based on what happens in 2019. We don't know for sure if that's the case or not, but it feels like it could be, and you can't write the history of the Jacksonville Jaguars without Tom Coughlin. And if he's gone because of the decisions he made, and Nick Foles fits largely into that. We spent so much time, day after day, week after week, talking about what the Jags were going to have to do to be in a position if they were going to go get one of these quarterbacks in this draft. Where do they have to go to get Dwayne Haskins in this draft? Do they need to get to 4? Do they need to get to 3? Do they just need to get ahead of the Giants? What do they have to do? Well, it turns out they may have had to do nothing to get Dwayne Haskins when everything is said and done, and he could be sitting there for him when they're picking 7th tonight, and they've already made their decision on Dwayne Haskins because they went out and got Nick Foles. That is massive. And if you tie that into how big is this draft, because they've decided to forego quarterback for another draft when they could have been in position to get a guy like Dwayne Haskins potentially, then yeah, I think it is massive. I think it is as big potentially as them passing on Patrick Mahomes in 2017. It depends on how all of these guys work out. Is it the biggest ever? No. Because I think them taking Tony Boselli number 2 overall and him being the most Hall of Fame-worthy player they've ever had in their franchise's history, it's as massive a decision as an organization could have made, and they made the right one when given that opportunity. So is it bigger than that one? No. But I think it's huge for a guy like Coughlin, whose job could be on the line, and they already did put all their eggs in the Nick Foles basket as far as what they were going to do at the quarterback position to allow them some flexibility here at number 7 with, as I said, a bunch of second-tier options when everything was said and done when they'll be drafting.
And I agree. The first one, I think, is the most important, or was the most important. But we could go back to the 2017 draft. So that's obviously when Tom Coughlin first got here and joined the staff. They decided to draft Leonard Fournette number 4 overall, and they could have had Deshaun Watson. So I always go back.
Patrick Mahomes.
And you obviously also could have had Patrick Mahomes. I go back to that draft and think that one might have been the most important because that might have changed the trajectory for the franchise. Yes, Leonard Fournette was crucial for that 2017 season, but look where this team is now. You're hoping that a former Super Bowl MVP is going to come in and be able to drastically change the culture around here to a winning culture. But you're not 100% convinced. You can't show me anyone who's 100% convinced that he's going to be able to do that. Obviously, now after watching both Mahomes and Watson, you are 100% convinced they're going to be able to do that with their franchises. All right, Tampa Bay Buccaneers head coach Bruce Arians said this week. You can't draft for need. You draft for need, you get fired. Draft the best player. And if you've got 2 of them, now you've got 3 of them. Just take the best players available for you. If that's true, then the Bucs You assume take a defensive lineman, not a quarterback, right, at five?
I do. I think they take Oliver. I think Oliver's there at five, and I think they're going to prioritize that. Particularly, look, Gerald McCoy, we don't know where that career is going.
No.
We don't know what that relationship is really like with Tampa Bay. So if you get a chance to take Oliver, I would much more rather do that if I'm Tampa Bay than draft a linebacker. So I think there's a good chance that Tampa Bay goes with what Arians is saying there. And I think there's a good chance that GM Jason Licht takes that Oliver if he is available at five. And if he's not, then I think Josh Allen is, or Quinnen Williams. Bosa, obviously, that's a pipe dream. But again, if you're the Bucks, you need Murray to go one. You need Murray to go one.
Yes.
Or you might have to – then you might be forced to take the linebacker.
Yeah. Yeah, I think you'd be happy with Devin White if he falls to you. It's – linebackers are funny in the draft process. It feels like every year a linebacker or a guard winds up being talked about as the safest player in the draft, right? There's more value to having a middle linebacker than there is an interior lineman. There just is. And it's rare that drafts work out like it did last year where Quentin Nelson was that safe prospect that everyone was talking about. So this guy's going to be an 8-time Pro Bowler and he's going to be a first ballot Hall of Famer. Well, he looks like it through a year. We'll see what it looks like for the next decade for that guy. But there's always a middle linebacker in every draft where they have that kind of hyperbolic talk about them too. You know, and this year it happens to be Devin White. It's Devin Bush to some degree after that. A couple years ago when the Jags got Miles Jack, barring the injury, that is exactly how Miles Jack would have been talked about by everybody going into that draft. This is the safest prospect in the draft, Miles Jack. It seems to center around a linebacker more years than it doesn't. Not surprised that White would be that guy this year up there in Tampa Bay. If you're true to your board, I wouldn't be surprised at all if Devin White is your number four or five player. Wouldn't surprise me at all. If you're just ranking the players in this draft, wouldn't surprise me at all if he's your number four or five player and the three guys you have ahead of him are going to be defensive linemen.
And that's who I have going there to Tampa is Devin White, because I don't have Ed Oliver still being available. I have him going third overall. But so let's say if Dave Caldwell and Tom Coughlin believe in this philosophy and they don't go need whatsoever, then that means T.J. Hockenson's not the pick, right, Hayes?
Well, I mean, I think, see, to me, T.J. Hockenson is more best available player than he is need.
Absolutely.
Yes, he is a great need. He fills the need. But to me, I just don't think T.J. Hockenson's are in every draft. I think T.J. Hockenson is a rare talent for what he does. Is his position a little undervalued? Yes, and I wouldn't debate that. But when you get a chance to take a player who I don't know if we've seen something similar in the last few years, you can't depend on the college game with the spread everywhere to continually give you T.J. Hockenson's. I think if they take Hockenson at seven, while it is a need, I think that's the best available player.
Likely. I think if you're drafting pure best available player, wouldn't be surprised at all if eight of your top 10 players are defensive linemen, honestly, in this draft. And that would include guys like Cleveland Farrell, Christian Wilkins, Rashawn Gary, maybe even Montez Sweat. Wouldn't be surprised at all if all those guys are among your top 10 players in this draft. Where do you fit Hockenson in among those guys? I think it's hard to say, but I do agree with you on the idea, Hayes, that if you go Hockenson, it's because he was your best available player. I don't think you never, 0% of the time, do you take a tight end in the top 10 because it's a need. That's crazy if that's the decision you're making, and that's the kind of thing that will get you fired. You do not draft tight ends in the top half of an NFL draft because you need one. You draft him because you really love this one. And if it happens to fill a need too, fantastic. But you don't draft that guy because we really need help at tight end. Boo hiss on that. I have no interest if that is the rationale behind them taking a guy like T.J. Hockenson. You tell me that he's the highest rated player still left on your board, I can buy that. And I'm okay with that. And I can forget the positional value stuff because of that. But don't tell me it's a need that we felt like we had to fill in this draft. You draft him because he's the best guy available, not because he fills some perceived need that you have on your roster.
And history shows that not a lot of tight ends are drafted in the top 10, but that a lot of guys should have been, right? Travis Kelce taken in the third round obviously should have been a top 10 pick. So you can't look at it like that. By the way, one guy that I really like at defensive end is Jalen Ferguson out of Louisiana Tech. Mm-hmm. He led the league in, or led the NCAA in sacks last season, and he originally
He's
wasn't
the
invited.
All-time leader.
Yeah, and the all-time leader. He originally wasn't invited to the combine, and then they went back on that, and he was able to go. I love this story, and this is a guy that I'd be, if the Jaguars go offense at 7, I would love to see him go at 38 or come here at 38. He is in Ruston, Louisiana. There was a tornado, obviously, that came through there. He is helping people there, and because there's no cell phone service, he may not know if he's drafted on Friday in the second round because of what he's doing. That is the type of
person I
would love to have in Jacksonville, A, in this community, but B, also in this locker room. And I think he's a great player, too.
Yeah, it's a really cool story, and maybe he sneaks into the end of the first round. Certainly could be a name that tomorrow, when we're talking about getting ready for round two, say they do go offensive line. You know, if they were able to go offensive line and then get a guy like Jalen Ferguson coming back in the second round, sign me up. I'd be 100% on board for something like that.
And that's why, like I said, I really want offense at 7, and I'm okay with a defensive player at 38 to maybe fill in the gaps there. Hayes, we're going to get to your mock draft in just a minute, but is there a trade in there? Is there something wild that happens?
Well, I think, and Tony hit on this, and I think he's right. I think there's a chance that we get through 6 picks and the elite of the elite are gone. And we now have entered into that tier. And I don't think an offensive lineman belongs in that tier. But I do think there's teams that are going to be looking to get offensive line help that are a little further back. So I still think it's a hot zone for the Jaguars at 7, that they could have some interest. And we'll see. So I do think that they will field calls. And I think they will get some attractive offers. And I think there's one team in particular. You always look at teams with a lot of draft ammunition. I think there's one team in particular that would be making the right decision to get on the phone and move up from 12 to 7.
All right. I can't wait to find out who that is. If you want to come out to tonight's draft party at Daly's Place, where we are live, you, of course, are invited. It is free, but you do have to register. So head to jaguars.com/draft night. Gates open in about 40 minutes, right at 6:30, and you will hear from Calais Campbell and Tony Baselli on the stage. And, of course, you'll be able to watch the NFL Network coverage as the Jaguars make the first pick. We're watching them set up all the drink stations right about now, so we're getting a little thirsty, but come on out and have an excellent time and watch the Jaguars make that 7th pick. Or if they trade out, like Hayes just predicted, that of course will be interesting. All right, when we come back, we are going to take a look at Hayes's mock draft. That is next on the Frangie Show on 1010 XL 92.5 FM. Frank Frangie will be, of course, hosting the draft special that comes up in an hour. That's when Hayes Carline, Tony Smith, and I will exit. Frank, Tony Baselli, and Jeff Logman will enter. We are live from Daly's Place. The gates open in just about a half hour. Hayes, Tony, do y'all like Van Morrison? Or am I alone in this enjoyment
of
the music today?
I like Brown Eyed Girl.
Okay.
Other than that, I don't know much.
Okay.
I like Van Morrison fine, yeah.
All right. Did you know that he has stage fright?
No,
I did not know that.
I picked him for today's Old Rock Thursday just because I find that fascinating.
So if he was selected, he would not go up and shake the commissioner's hand and give him a hug, probably?
I would tend to agree. Now, I don't know if he has stage fright like that or if it's more like when he actually has to sing.
Oh.
I don't know if it's just being up on stage. I haven't read that much about it, but I always found that interesting that any sort of performer, so to speak, would have stage fright. All right.
Well, I've heard, and again, this is why you have guys like me in on shows like today. I've heard that the people who have a fear of public speaking, like that fear, the spot in your brain that lights up is the same spot that, like, if you are getting attacked by a bear. Like, it is that fight-or-flight reflex is the thing that people are having to deal with and fight through. Like, if they're dealing with that kind of stage fright, that kind
really?
Of thing. Like, it is this, like, it's serious, and you may or may not be able to do anything about it. Like, your body may just say, run. Like, just given whatever you're doing, just get out of this situation. So, it's legit. I think, and I've also heard that the only way to get over it is to do it. Van Morrison's done it enough now.
Yeah.
I think he should be over it.
You would think so, but I wonder, you know, I have a fear of flying. And I didn't always, but then one day I just got on a plane, probably because there was turbulence, like Mike had experience on his way to Nashville. And from then on, now I'm afraid that the plane is not going to do what the plane is supposed to do.
Which
is take off safely, fly to the distance, and land safely. So the whole time I freak out, and everyone keeps saying, well, the more you fly, it'll get better. But every time I fly, I still have it. So I do wonder if it goes away, or once it's in your head, if it just lasts.
Yeah, I don't know.
Hey, so you don't like public speaking,
right? It'll
be
there forever.
Right? Thanks a lot.
Yeah, I am apprehensive to do it But I do. I think that is something that the more you do, the more comfortable you get with it. So I still get nervous for sure, but not to the level and not to the anxiety level that I would have had doing it in like my mid-20s.
Do you get nervous when you make a or finalize your last mock draft?
I'm nervous now.
All right. So tell us, take it through.
I think it's going to be an interesting scenario. If it ends up going Kyler Murray and then a defensive run, I think the Jaguars will be in an interesting situation. The team I keep coming back to with this is Green Bay, who was very aggressive last year. Their GM, Brian Gutekunst, I don't know how to say his name, executed two trades in the first round last season. They moved back, allowing New Orleans to get Marcus Davenport. Then they came up from 27 to 18 to take the cornerback out of Louisville, Jaire Alexander. So as I look at it, Green Bay has 10 selections. And I don't think that they're so bad as a roster that 10 draft picks are going to make their team. So I think it's one of those mutually beneficial deals where the Jaguars can move back five spots. The Packers can come up to seven and select the offensive lineman of their choice. And I do think they're all different guys. I mean, just because Dillard and Jonah Williams and Juwan Taylor are all considered roughly around the same, they're all three totally different. So you could see a franchise saying, we've got to go up to get Williams or we've got to get Taylor. And I think when you look at Green Bay, they've got to protect Aaron Rodgers. He missed, obviously, a bunch of games 2 years ago. Last year he played through the injury. I think the Jaguars move back five spots in exchange for Green Bay's second rounder, which would be 44 overall, and their fourth round selection, 114, which is actually a bargain for Green Bay. There was a trade executed last year with the 7th and 12th picks. Buffalo traded up, to take Josh Allen, the quarterback, sending the Buccaneers 2 second round selections. So the Jaguars would be getting less than what Tampa got. But I think if you're the Jaguars, you should be motivated to do this deal and to take a little less, because we talked about this the other day, Tony, on Jaguars Today. There are more holes here than that goes beyond right tackle, tight end, running back. I think receiver is a bigger need than what they think. I think linebacker is a need. I think interior defensive line is a need. I think free safety is a need. And I think both defensive end spots are needs for depth reasons. So
that's a lot.
It is. So when you look at the Jaguars having seven picks, if you're able to pick up two in this deal, two extra ones by swapping 7 to 12, then I think it gives you 9 selections. It would give you multiple picks in the second, third, and fourth rounds. And I think it makes sense for Green Bay, because if they really want to go offensive line, then I think it would make sense to go from 12 to 7. They would still have the 30th pick in this draft. They would still have their third rounder. They'd still have 8 selections. So they'd still have the ability to really add 2 elite players at 7 and 30 and have a lot of options depth-wise as well.
Along the lines of at least what you're talking about there, by the way, J.P. Shatter just tweeted out that he has a conversation that'll be coming up during the draft special starting at 7 o'clock tonight with Dave Caldwell. One of the quotes he pulled from that and tweeted out a few moments ago said that they have received initial inquiries about that 7th pick, that they're evaluating all of that. So, look, it's at least in the cards, right? The GM is talking about the potential, at least, for the team to trade down. That doesn't mean that they are. As we've known Dave Caldwell for a while, has been a guy. Mike Dempsey mentioned it early on in our show. The idea of one great player is better than 3 good players. That's the way Dave Caldwell feels about it. My question is, drafting number 7, are you in position to get a great player, or are you convincing yourself you're in position to get a great player in this particular draft? And I think it's an interesting question, given the spot that they're in this draft, with the premier guys really are along the defensive line. No one's talking about any of these offensive line prospects as special players. I think fans are talking about T.J. Hockenson being a special tight end. I've listened to plenty of people talking about him that aren't talking about him that way, that he's a really good tight end, but he's not a special tight end in that sense. And I think there are a lot of Jaguars fans that have convinced themselves that he's a special tight end and have talked about him that way for a while now. I don't think he's actually that kind of prospect. I think he's a really good tight end prospect. I don't think he's elite. And I think because of the position that he plays, if they are given the opportunity to move down, like I would have done several times in other drafts, Hayes, yeah, I would have moved. I'm curious with Caldwell still being a part of the decision process for this football team, he hasn't been willing to move. In that spot, he hasn't been willing to move. He's been willing to move up when he puts him in a position in the second or third round to get a guy he likes. But he's not been a guy that has been willing to move back necessarily when there may be a value to being able to do that. Maybe because of the precipice they're on this year compared to years past, they're more comfortable doing it. But to me, it's a, whew, I just don't expect it. Even though I think they've got a better opportunity than they have in a while to move if they want to, I just don't expect it.
And I still think they get Hawkinson. I think if they go to 12,
I think they certainly could.
I think what you're going to see is, let's say Green Bay comes up to take Jonah Williams to get ahead of Detroit, their obviously divisional rival. I think Detroit can go offensive line with Taylor. I think the Bills could go offensive line with Dillard. So there's your run there. Then you have Cincinnati, who I think probably is looking Christian Wilkins, a defensive lineman in that scenario. They could even possibly take a quarterback. Depending on who's there. And then you're back on the clock.
Yeah.
And Hawkinson's staring right at you at 12. And, oh, by the way, you've picked up a second round and a fourth round selection from Green Bay. I think the gamble is if Hawkinson isn't there, what do you do? And if Hawkinson isn't there, I would still advocate to take Noah Fant, his teammate at tight end. While he doesn't offer the blocking, he is a better athlete. He is a better receiver. So he limits you a little bit in terms of that chess piece. You don't get the versatility. You are going to tip off the defense, and Coughlin has certainly talked about he'd like to find a guy that doesn't do that. But I think if you're adding a playmaker like that at tight end, I think you could do a lot worse, particularly now you've got the two extra picks in your back pocket.
Well, and obviously, Hayes, you and I have advocated for Hawkinson. Tony, you think maybe offensive line in that seventh spot. So let's say the three tight ends that everybody knows the name, Hawkinson, Fant, and Irv Smith out of Alabama. Let's say all three are off the board. Who are you going to go to get at tight end? Are you going to get them? Are you going to get them at 38, or are you going to wait to the third round, assuming the trade scenario doesn't happen and the Jaguars don't have 2 second round picks? Or is there a guy that you've already have targeted in your mind for, you know, whenever?
Not really. I mean, there's no specific guy that I have targeted, and I think it's hard. I mean, it's difficult enough to figure out what might be available to you in round two. At 38, if you were to pass on a particular position, I think round three, it's virtually impossible to really know you know what you're going to be looking at there. But, I mean, we've heard names, the Jay Sternbergers, those kind of guys of the world. I'm okay with that. But, again, that's because in my head, the idea of I feel like I get really good at right tackle is that is what I would rather have over I got really good at tight end. Like, bottom line, that's the way that I feel about it from a football perspective.
Sure.
If you're going to tell me I'm going to be really good at one of those spots, I'd rather be really good at tackle than I would be really good at tight end. And it's, I think, because we do have, you know, we were talking about the poll from the drill. You know, where over 60% of people were saying T.J. Hawkinson is the pick they want. Part of what I've been on a crusade to do today, at least part of my crusade today, has been preparing people for what Tom Coughlin is and what I expect him to do. And I just expect, with Tom Coughlin in a position to draft the best offensive lineman in a draft, if he has an opportunity to get one of those defensive linemen, I think it's 100% that. But if he has the opportunity, because the defensive premier defensive linemen are gone, if he has an opportunity to pick his pick among the offensive line or take a tight end, my expectation is that Tom Coughlin's going to go with the offensive lineman. And I also think that some of the conversation about T.J. Hawkinson has gotten a bit out of kilter with what the reality is as far as what he is as a prospect. He's not Gronkowski. And using that name when trying to project him into the league, one, it's unfair to Rob Gronkowski, because this is a guy that's walking into the Hall of Fame on the first ballot. It's going to be a while before we see these guys. Doesn't mean he's not a really good player. Doesn't even mean that I'd be upset if that's the name they call. It's not the name I expect. I don't have a problem with them upgrading tight end. I think it's easier to upgrade tight end than it is to upgrade the offensive line. And they're in a prime position to upgrade their offensive line. That's the direction I would expect them to go if they can't get one of the premier pass rushers.
All right, Hayes did all seven rounds, so we will find out the second well, both second rounds, since obviously now the Jaguars have an extra one. And then, of course, the third through the seventh, we will do that. When we return, we are live from Daly's Place on 1010XL on 82.5 FM.
And then pick on 1010XL. Brought to you by the personal injury law firm of Harrell & Harrell and Community First Credit Union.
It's an old rock Thursday. Music the way it should be, or at least used to be, on The Frangie Show.
That's right. Caravan is on its way. The caravan of people down here to Daly's Place. If you would like to join them for the draft party tonight, just go online to jaguars.com/draft night and register. Parking is free. Registration is free. Just come on down and have a great time here at Daly's Place.
10 minutes, right? They're opening up the gates.
That's
in 10
right.
Minutes.
In 10 minutes, the gates will open. I'm sure there is a throng of people out there chomping at the bit to get inside. It is a gorgeous evening. It's in the low 80s. There is a breeze.
TJ, I can hear it from outside.
You know people want TJ Hawkinson. Despite your efforts to thwart Jacksonville's excitement and anticipation for TJ Hawkinson as the pick, despite that, people are still clamoring for the tight end of Iowa.
All right. Trying to head off their heartbreak at the pass.
And I certainly understand that. I've kind of had to convince myself that my emotions are going to be just fine if the Jaguars take a defensive player, because at the end of the day, I think they need to go offense no matter what.
What are you going to do? Okay, I'll get Miss Hawkinson
sure.
here.
Yes.
What are they going to do when, with the seventh selection of the 2019 NFL draft, the Jacksonville Jaguars select Andre Dillard, offensive tackle, Washington State?
I will certainly understand why they've done it. I will hope that was somebody that Nick Foles wanted and he identified. And I won't be upset. If it's offense, I won't be upset no matter what.
Okay.
If it's defense, if it's one of those elite guys, I'll tell myself I'm not upset. Deep down, I will be, because this team scored the fewest amount of touchdowns last year in the NFL. Mm-hmm. That's something I can't forget. You know, we cover this team game in, game out. We feel the lack of offense. All right, Hayes.
Well, hey, you bring up an interesting question, because what if it is Andre Dillard, and what if the philosophy that they have operated under over the next 3 days, we start to see the morphing into something different by who they look after? Because Andre Dillard, everybody says, great left tackle prospect, great pass protector, but not probably the least physical in the ground game tackle that you know people put in that trio.
Sure.
So that really, I think, is going to be intriguing over these next few days, and particularly tonight. Do you see a player come in who traditionally, under Marone and Coughlin, would not have really fit in, but now do you see that John DeFilippo presence? And I'm not suggesting he's the one making the pick, but just that there has been a revelation in the offseason and what they want to shift to, and do we start to see it? Because if the pick is Andre Dillard, that to me would tell me there is a shift.
Mm-hmm.
Because you're clearly looking at more pass protection there than you are a guy who's going to road grade his man on third and one or hold his own in the 4-minute drill when you're trying to protect the lead.
I think there are a lot of assumptions being made about what the Jaguars want to be on offense. And they want to be that ground and pound and run first and all that. I don't think we have any idea what they actually want to be for the 2019 season and going forward. And I don't think you bring in a guy like DeFilippo, who got fired in Minnesota because he wouldn't run the ball. Like, that's part of the reason he got fired midseason last year, is they weren't trying to run the ball. They were fifth in pass attempts in the league. And finally Minnesota said, what are you doing? We got to run it every now and then. We draft Dalvin Cook. We do these different things. We have to have a shift in philosophy here. We wanted to bring in a new quarterback, but we didn't want to be this. Like, we don't want to be this. I wonder, where is the marriage between these two things? And I think if it was a guy like Dillard, I think it does give you a strong indication of where the turn could be. But I think there are a lot of assumptions about what the Jaguars' offense is. I'm not sure how much of that is true. I'm just not sure how much of it is reality with what they want to be at this point. I think offensive line is certainly in play. I think TJ Hawkinson is certainly in play. That doesn't mean I think wide receiver is seriously in play for the Jags at number 7. But I think there's a lot up in the air from the outside trying to figure out about what their identity really is going to be in 2019. We've had it wrapped around Leonard Fournette for a couple years. I don't know if that's the case in 2019. I really don't.
And I would love to see the breakdown for the years or the games that Foles played in Philadelphia, the percentage of passes versus runs. But you're going to guess it was probably heavier pass than it was running the football. All right, so assuming that the Jaguars do take T.J. Hockenson with the 12th pick because they've traded with the Packers, now what do you have happening in the second round?
In the second round, I think they need to address defensive end. I think you're looking at they need to find a little bit of a compliment for Yannick Ngakoue in the nickel when they want to move Calais inside. I think DeAndre Walker out of Georgia is a player that he's had a quiet draft process, but I think 13 sacks, 5 forced fumbles last year, I think he would make a lot of sense. And N'Keal Harry at 44 overall, the pick acquired from Green Bay, I think he's dynamic. I still don't know that there's a number one receiver in the room, and he brings a physical presence. He's great, yards after the catch. So, again, if he's there and if you want to flip these guys, you know, that's fine in terms of 38 and 44.
Sure.
But I think when you look at it, I think receiver is a bigger need than what the Jaguars have led on. I think when you're looking at D.D. Westbrook, Marquise Lee, D.J. Chark, Keelan Cole, to me, adding a second-round receiver and a guy that really gives you a physical presence like Harry would at 6'4", 213, I think that would make a lot of sense.
I love the N'Keal Harry pick. I love that 6'4", 213 pounds as at receiver, especially for a team like this. You know, last year they went out on a limb, the Jaguars did, and decided Dante Moncrief was going to be the receiver that they needed in this group, and obviously that did not go according to plan. So I do think they need some fresh blood in that room. All right, so with the third-round pick, Caleb McGarry out of Washington, Tony, Mike mentioned him earlier when we chatted with him live in Nashville. He likes him, right?
Yeah, he does. And look, I think there's only one pick in the top 10. The Jags don't get to pick three times in the top 10. They can't address all these needs. There's got to be a plan in place to try to figure out how to spread out where you're going to do different things. Look, I think Caleb is a guy that we've heard talked about as maybe second, third-round guy for a while along that offensive line. So if you're going to forego the opportunity to address it at 7, you're going to have to do it at some point, likely. So you try to figure out different names that fit in different spots. I certainly think if you look at their top 4 picks, tight end, offensive lineman, whether it be a tackle or left tackle, right tackle, I think either one is fine as far as addressing one of those. But tight end, offensive tackle, and somebody on the defensive line, I expect him to address all three of those spots and then figure out what to do with that fourth of those picks. I think it's a bit of a wild card, and I think it can come into play as early as the second round if they do love a wide receiver, if there is a value that they like at one of those positions. I don't think you have to do it in a specific order. I think the top of the draft dictates where the value is going to be as far as trying to address those in some kind of order, where if one of those defensive linemen was there, all right, plug him in, and then we figure out what we want to do for a plan, a tight end and offensive line there in the second and third round, or vice versa. If you go tight end with a guy like T.J. Hockenson and feel good about the options that are going to be available to you. I think it's harder to feel good about the defensive line options if you don't get one of those premier guys. I don't see how you pass on one of them compared to the drop-off there as opposed to offensive tackle or tight end.
Yeah, and the interesting part will be, what do the Jaguars prioritize? Is it, depending on what's there, obviously, but is it offensive line first, defensive line, tight end? Is it the complete opposite of those with tight end first, then defensive line, and then offensive line? That, to me, that's the most interesting part. Or are we wrong and they have some other position in there? None of us think so, but certainly stranger things have happened. The Jaguars decided to part ways with free safety Tashaun Gipson. Therefore, they probably need to draft a free safety in this draft. Hayes, you have them taking a guy that I like also out of Alabama.
Yeah, Deontay Thompson, who wasn't able to do much in terms of the draft process because of an injury, but is somebody that I think does have that range that they want at free safety. And I know they like Jared Wilson. They re-signed him. I understand that. But that's a big gamble, in my opinion. In a win or perhaps get fired season, I would want to bring somebody else in to push Jared Wilson, perhaps unseat him at some point in the year. And I think Deontay Thompson would be a good fit. I think he's more talented than going late third, but because of the draft process not going his way and with the injury, I could see him fall into this part of the draft. And I, look, this person's going to play. The free safety is going to log over 1,000 snaps. If it's the same guy from week one through week 16, never comes off the field. Jared Wilson, to me, is risky. Hopefully he'll live up to it and be fantastic, and there won't be much of a gap between him and Gibson. But I would want to fortify it, and I like the idea of Thompson and Ronnie Harrison going into his second year. I like them, you know, kind of blossoming around the all-star cornerback tandem of Jalen Ramsey and A.J. Boye.
And there might be an advantage that they both played at Alabama, and that communication level, they certainly played together. So I like that idea, too. All right, take us through the rest of these fourth round. Or wait, sorry, I skipped one. Two in the fourth round. First one in the fourth round, Jermaine Pratt, an outside linebacker out of NC State. And then also in the fourth round, defensive tackle Rennell Wren out of Arizona State.
Yeah, I think this is where you're getting to the point of the less important needs that are still there. I think we just don't know what Telvin Smith's future is with the Jaguars. I think it's uncertain. And I think Pratt is a very similar player. Six sacks, two picks, lives behind the line of scrimmage, ran a very good combine time. I think Pratt would do a good job in giving them some depth if Telvin's back. And perhaps being a successor if this is his last year here or if he's already played his last snap here. So I like outside linebacker in the fourth round. And then I also think they have to look beyond Darius and maybe even Avery Jones to an extent. I think they need a big body. Wren is 6'5", 318. So I think if you're able to secure a player like that who started to come on late in the year for Arizona State, I think that would make a lot of sense.
And you really think that Benny Snell's going to be available in the sixth round? I think he might go way faster.
Yeah, you know, he's a guy that I love, but the more that you see the analysts break him down, and really the depth, I think, just at the running back spot, I mean, you know, you could see 15 of these guys come off the board before Snell gets picked. I really like him. I think he could be there, or I think he could be taken in the fourth round. Possibly even the late third. But I do think there's going to be a back staring them in the face in the sixth round where everybody's going to be like, wow, I didn't see that coming. So I think it's Benny Snell.
Snell is an interesting prospect to me because I think you have to ignore all the testing. Basically, with a guy like Benny Snell, if you're going to, it's going to be, I don't care what kind of 40 he ran. I don't care what he did on the bench press. I don't care what he tested at all. I'm just going to go on what I saw him do in SEC play. I'm betting on the fact that he's a gamer as opposed to betting on the athlete that I'm getting in this spot. And to me, from an NFL perspective, that makes more sense 5, 6, 7 as far as what round you're going to take that kind of chance on a guy. And like Elijah Holyfield, right? Like it's the same kind of thing to me. I'm betting on what I saw, not what the testing told me with a guy like Holyfield and a guy like Snell, because the testing told me they shouldn't be drafted, is what the testing, especially Holyfield. This guy shouldn't be drafted. But I think you look at what they did on the field and say, at what point does that overwhelm what that other information told me? And odds are it's probably in that 5th, 6th, 7th round range.
All right, and finally, tight end Tommy Sweeney out of Boston College rounds out the group, and the Jaguars end up with two tight ends, which certainly would not be a bad thing because that position needs some added depth and certainly some much better players than maybe are already here. All right, the fans are starting to fill in here at Daly's Place. So come on downtown and have an excellent time as the Jaguars currently hold the 7th pick overall in the 2019 NFL Draft. We have one segment to go before the Jaguars Draft Special kicks off at 7 o'clock with Frank Frangie, Tony Baselli, and Jeff Loggeman. So we'll be back with our final predictions. That's coming up next on 1010XL and 82.5 FM.
It's an old rock Thursday. Music the way it should be, or at least used to be, on The Frangie Show.
One segment to go here on The Frangie Show. Frank Frangie, Tony Baselli, and Jeff Loggeman will take over at 7 o'clock. And, of course, we'll take you through the Jaguars' 7th overall pick in the first round of the 2019 NFL Draft. Hayes Carline, Tony Smith, Lauren Brooks with you here. Tom Champion making it all happen as our on-site engineer. Andrew Gibson is on his way here to relieve Tom Champion. And Ryan Big Country Bonifant is back at 1010 XL headquarters. Obviously, it takes a lot of people to make this whole thing work properly, and we appreciate everyone. Hey, as you and I have been monitoring Twitter throughout the show, We both probably thought there would be some sort of news. There is nothing. This well is dry.
We got nothing. And you're right. It's surprising. I thought it feels like at this time last year, the Baker Mayfield news was out that he was going one. You know, we're getting pretty close now, and these guys are really doing a good job of keeping it under wraps in Arizona. I know the league really wants the ratings to be as high as possible. They've incorporated, I think ABC is the one that is showing it in prime time. So they've got pressure, and they've said that to the teams that, look, we want to keep as much drama as we can. But I am surprised this close to it that we still don't know who the number one pick is. We don't know really anything about what's about to happen.
Well, apparently the league basically sent out a memo to all the national reporters saying, you do not report whatever you know about the first pick. They basically told them, whatever you know, nothing.
Zip it.
We want it to be on TV. We want people watching when they find out who the number one pick is going to be. From a television perspective, makes all the sense in the world. From someone who's doing a four-hour radio show on the day of the draft, I wouldn't have minded if they had broke that story about half an hour ago, but I can wait till 8:15 like everybody else to find out who the first pick is.
Well, even just late intelligence or counterintelligence, whether it's something that helps a player, although that's rare, or if it's, you know, Laremy Tunsil using a gas mask, I mean, normally there
Ace?
Is something.
What was he using that gas mask for?
I have no idea.
Last dance with Mary Jane, honey.
But, you know, really we've gotten the Montez Sweat news today that he was misdiagnosed. At least that's what his camp is saying. It's weird to me that would, if you're the agent, and you would think that would have come out well before now. So even though I know when we had Pete on, he kind of pushed back against it a little bit. But it does make me wonder if there's some legitimacy to that, just because it's odd that they would only find that out today in time to get it out. So Montez Sweat will be somebody, you know, just worth – look, I mean, I think he is in play at 7, or he was at one point. So if the Jaguars do not have any sort of concern at all, if they believe that he does not have a heart issue, might Montez Sweat be a guy at 7 that they could look at?
And he's a guy that Leon Searcy really likes, by the way.
Yeah. Look, I don't think it's ridiculous, right? And, look, we don't know if the Jaguars had him off their board 2 weeks ago. You know, he might have been right where he's going to be throughout this entire process. And maybe the Jaguars' medical eval was, there's nothing wrong with Montez Sweat. We don't know, right? And that's part of the intrigue of a draft process is we don't know what we don't know about how teams feel about players. I know how
so
I
eloquent.
Feel. Right. I know how I feel about players. I know how I feel about a bunch of these guys after talking about them for 3 months. I know how I feel about them. And I know what the hierarchy is of what I would like to see happen with the Jaguars at number 7. That has nothing to do with what is on that board inside that room, inside this stadium. Nothing. And they certainly aren't listening to the three of us to determine what order they should have them in.
I beg to disagree.
Dave!
Tony Khan came
out
earlier.
Move and get Oliver. Do it now.
He talked to Hayes. Hayes told him T.J. Hockenson is our selection. Well, two out of the three of us, at least.
What do you
I know Tony went right back in that building and had them erase what they had on their board and change it to T.J.
Oh, okay.
Well, as Dave Colo said, the hay is in the barn. They already knew, you know, what they want to do with this pick. And, all right, so how do you think the war room goes when you've got a guy like Tom Coughlin in there who obviously has made selections as a general manager in the past, and then you've got a guy like Dave Caldwell, who is the general manager. How do you think those conversations go, let's say, when it comes time to crunch time, when they are on the clock with that 7th overall pick?
I think you make your pitch. Like, if there's a guy that you really believe in, you make your pitch for why you really believe in him, and then you look over at Tom and say, what do you think? Like, because in the end, whatever Tom wants to do, that's what they should be doing. And it's been part of the reason why, like, fans that are getting on the Caldwell for the Fournette pick, I just look at him and say, that's Coughlin.
Right.
This is his decision ultimately. And if he decides to defer to Dave Caldwell, then that's his decision too. Right? Like, but in the end, you all look at Tom and say, is this the direction we're going to go, or is there something you would rather do? And maybe you can convince him to some degree that you are on the right side of whatever argument you happen to be having. But if he wants it to be X, it will be X when everything is said and done.
And you only have 10 minutes, Hayes, to try and convince someone who's been doing this for so many years.
And that's the key. I don't think it's convincing. I think they know, you know, they'll see the first five. Then they have 10 more minutes to absorb what the Giants are going to do.
Right.
So when they get on the clock, I think they know the pick. Then I think it just becomes, okay, you know, they've been working the phone since last weekend identifying teams and what the right scenario. Yes, we'd like to maybe come up to 7 and talk to you about that. So now you have the 6. You know what teams sort of had an idea. Maybe they normally don't want to tell you the player, but you have an idea, and they're going to call. If they've already laid the groundwork, then and their guy's there, they're going to call. So I think the 10 minutes really is more about, is particularly tonight, because I think it'd be ideal if they could move back, because I think Hockenson can be had at 12. Then, to me, that's where I think the 10 minutes comes in. I think they'll work the phones for 5 or 6 minutes, see if there's something that can be had there. Then they will make their decision to stay at 7 or not. If they stay at 7, you have maybe 1 minute of, this is what we're good with. You know, say it now. If you have any objections, say it now, and then I think they'll turn the card in.
Well, and that'll be the moment we've certainly all been waiting for a very long time. You could say since the end of the season, but really we've been talking about the draft since before the end of the season. And certainly a lot of us were watching Dwayne Haskins during the end of the season, during the end of the Ohio State season, watching him because we thought maybe that was a guy that would land here in Jacksonville. Obviously, the Jaguars in March decided to acquire Nick Foles through free agency, and he will be the starter here come 2019 season.
I just saw a Foles Eagles jersey, by the way.
Did you? Well,
I did.
You know, sometimes if you've already made the $75 investment, $100 investment in the jersey, you're going to keep rocking it for a few more years.
I've seen a handful of Foles Jaguars jerseys, too. I mean, I've seen both, but I did just see a Foles Eagles jersey here in the house for the draft.
Well, I won't say fly, Eagles, fly, but I will say that there are a ton of Eagles fans who really believe in Nick Foles, so certainly they're excited for his opportunity here. And if I know someone who lives in Jacksonville who's an Eagles fan, and now she's becoming a Jaguars fan, and she's so excited that he's here. She totally believes in him. She wanted him before the signing was
announced.
Welcome
to the light. Philadelphia is a bad city full of bad people and bad fans and a pretty good football team.
And Jacksonville is a gorgeous city with wonderful people.
Yes.
All right, so time to make our pick. A, who do you hope the Jaguars take? And B, who do you think the Jaguars will take? Tony, I know for you, your hope is that Oliver. And you think the Jaguars will take Jonah Williams, but make your case for both of them.
My hope is that Oliver, because I do believe what we've been talking about with him for 3 years. I think he is. If you were just going to rank the prospects in this draft, I think, honestly, he would be number 2. And I don't expect Quinton Williams to be available to the Jags. I think there's a chance, at least, that Ed Oliver still potentially could be. I'm not bothered by all the jacket ridiculousness that was going on. I never was. I always thought that was more on the coach trying to embarrass a player than anything else when all that was going on. I love the player. As far as what I think is going to happen, I think those 4 defensive linemen are coming off the board. I think Kyler Murray's going number 1. I think a linebacker's coming off the Tampa Bay, and I think the Jags are going to be on the front end of Tier 2. And I think when everything is said and done, Tom Coughlin and his football philosophy takes over that room, and I think his football philosophy is you build up front with big guys. And I think if there was a pass rusher that was worth it, that's the direction they would go, which is why I think it would be Oliver or Allen if either of those guys were available to him, because those seem like the most likely among those elite prospects to potentially still be there at 7. With those guys gone, I think the next group is along the offensive line, and I think the opportunity to draft their favorite offensive lineman in this draft is too much for Tom Coughlin to pass up when everything is said and done. As far as who that's going to be, I think you can make a really good argument for any of the 3 guys. I land with Jonah Williams because I think he is probably the most... I think he's the most studious of the left tackle potential prospects there. I think he does give you some flexibility with maybe being able to play 4 spots on the offensive line potentially going into the future. So if I had to pick one, my pick would be Jonah Williams to the Jags tonight at 7.
Hayes.
I think Josh Allen is the best case scenario that quarterback gets hot. And we see one go at 1, Murray to Arizona. We see the Raiders take one at 4. assuming that would be Haskins, and we see the Giants go ahead and take either Locke or Daniel Jones. That's the only scenario where Josh Allen might fall to 7. That, to me, is best-case scenario. I think the Jaguars will field offers, and then I think it just depends on did it work out. The team that wanted to move up, is their guy there? I think it's going to end up tonight with T.J. Hockenson being announced as the newest Jacksonville Jaguar.
All right. Well, certainly I think this place, Daly's Place, that is, will erupt if it is T.J. Hockenson. I think they'll be somewhat excited if it's Jonah Williams because, Tony, that's a name that they know. But I don't know that they'll be nearly as thrilled for an O-line guy as certainly as they would for a tight end.
No doubt, yeah.
But I think this fan base is educated, and I think they understand that this team, this franchise, needs to protect Nick Foles, the new franchise quarterback. They also need someone or some people, some guys, for him to throw it to. I think my best-case scenario is the defensive players are off the board so that the Jaguars take T.J. Hockenson. I understand the value at the defensive position, and especially here for a guy to play opposite Yannick Ngakoue. But I do think there are some other guys. We talked about Jalen Ferguson a little bit earlier in the show. I think there are some other guys, just like an offensive line. I don't think Jonah Williams or Juwan Taylor or Andre Dillard are elite offensive linemen, so that's why I don't want the Jaguars to take any of them with the 7th pick overall. I think they can get an offensive lineman in the 2nd round or maybe the 3rd round overall. I think one thing is for sure, though, this place now filled with a bunch of teal jerseys, a bunch of black jerseys, they are ready for the draft to start. What do y'all think?
The excitement is off the charts here, considering we're still a little bit of a ways out. But, look, I can see a Foles jersey, a couple Foles. I've got Yannick. I've got Jalen. I've got a Tony Boselli jersey. Very cool, Jalen Ramsey. This is going to be a great night. This is such a great venue. It's hard to believe that a few years ago it wasn't here. But it's a great place for a draft party, and hopefully it'll be a great night for this franchise.
Look, I love the draft parties. I do. I think this place is bumping. I'm looking forward to the next few hours, whatever's going to happen with the Jags. I'm sick and tired of the Jacksonville Jaguars picking in the first hour and a half of every NFL draft every year. I would like to have parties that go deep into the night. Let's celebrate our Super Bowl title. Watch Roger Goodell walk up on the front of that podium and have to say, with the 32nd pick, the defending Super Bowl champion, Jacksonville Jaguars select whoever the heck they select.
Whoop, whoop.
And who cares when he says it, as is? This is going to be a lot of fun. And we are a draft town. The fans in town, they absolutely love it. I love talking about it for the months and months and months that we get to. It's the most fun puzzle to try to put together. It is the most fun off-season event in all of sports. It's the NFL draft. I'm looking forward to it tonight. Hopefully the Jaguars do get better. Because a lot of times when you're picking, even in the top 10, that doesn't mean you're better. Tonight you think you're better. In 2 years, I hope they're better for whatever they got done tonight in the NFL draft.
I certainly hope so. Well said. We are almost out of time, but I've got to say thank you to Tony Smith for pulling double duty, obviously hosting Jaguars today, earlier today, and also joining us for all 4 hours. Thanks, of course, as always, to Hayes Carline on the show. Thanks to Tom Champion for engineering. Thanks to both Andrew Gibson and Ryan Bonifant for producing back at 1010XL headquarters. Thanks to the wrestlers for joining us, Cody and Brandy Rhodes and Adam Hangman Page, and the Jaguars for getting that set up. They were a lot of fun. Thanks to Mike Dempsey and Pete Prisco for both joining us live from Nashville.
Did you just win an Academy Award?
I did. Thanks to everyone here for coming out to the Jaguars draft party. But, of course, stay tuned for Frank Frangie.
TJ, can you hear it?
Tony Boselli, Jeff Logman. They're going to have the Jaguars draft special coming up next. For Hayes Carline and Tony Smith, I'm Lauren Brooks. Enjoy your draft night on 1010XL 92.5 FM.